SIE America Radio Network News. I'm Darren Copeland. A shooting at New York City Hall has killed two people, including a city councilman. Reporter Glenn Shuck described what he heard about the shooter.
More than one city councilman reported that it was a silver handgun that was used by a person that was wearing a blue blazer. The council witnesses said that this person in a blue blazer, a male, simply stood up, pulled out the silver handgun, started firing anywhere between 5 and 10 shots.
Hospital sources say Councilman James Davis was killed. Authorities say the shooting was not an act of terrorism. Councilman David Weprin described the scene in council chambers as a war zone. Emergency officials say both of the victims were transported in cardiac arrest. Police are still looking for the gunman. One New York councilman said he felt it was a planned attack with a specific target. The Archdiocese of Boston is responding to a scathing report by Attorney General Tom Riley following his investigation into decades of sexual abuse of children by priests and other workers. In a statement, Father Christopher Coyne says the Archdiocese needs to further review the report before making a response. Coyne says the Archdiocese reiterates its commitment to treating the sexual abuse of a child as a criminal matter, to ending any culture of secrecy, and to adopting and implementing measures to prevent future abuse.
Still using Clarinex, Zyrtec, or Allegra? Then be aware, because this year many prescription plans are raising the copayment cost of your allergy medicine. So why pay more when those medicines are approved to treat fewer triggers? Ask your doctor about Flonase, fluticasone propionate nasal spray 50 micrograms. 99% of prescription plans cover Flonase, and Flonase is approved to relieve the nasal symptoms from pollen, dust mites, pet dander, pollution, smoke, and strong odors. More triggers than any leading allergy medicine. For best results, use Flonase daily. Maximum relief may take several days and results may vary. Side effects are generally mild and may include headache, nosebleed, or sore throat. To learn more about Flonase, see our ad in Fitness Magazine. Visit www.flonase.com or call 1-800-FLONASE. Allergy medicines costing you more? Simply ask your doctor if Flonase is right for you. All it takes is Flonase.
President Bush honored 11 well-known and not-so-well-known people with the nation's highest civil honor today, the Presidential Medal of Freedom. During the White House ceremony, the president acknowledged the accomplishments of the medal recipients. The 11 recipients included individuals with greatly differing backgrounds that included actor Charlton Heston, chef Julia Child, record-setting basketball coach John Wooden, and the late Baseball Hall of Famer Roberto Clemente. Northwest Airlines began bargaining with its 5,600 pilots today. It's the opening round of regularly scheduled contract talks. Pilots union spokesman Hal Meyer says the airline is asking all its unions for large concessions, citing the ongoing slump in the industry.
Any solutions to problems that the company faces really need to be taken on by all the stakeholders, you know, employees across the board and management, investors, bankers. So, yeah, we are reluctant to make any dramatic moves.
In February, Northwest asked its four major unions for job and wage concessions that would total about $950 million. Northwest says it does not comment on labor talks out of respect for the negotiating process.
Right now, it's nighttime. You're starving and there are people at Denny's just like you. Except for one thing. See, they're not starving. They just ordered a plate of steamy little mini burgers. Oh, here comes a big plate of hot, zesty nachos. Mmm! You know, there's one more difference between you and them. Yeah, see, they're having fun. Denny's, a good place to sit and eat.
A man suspected of being Canada's deadliest serial killer has been ordered to stand trial. Robert Picton, a pig farmer from British Columbia, is accused of murdering 15 of more than 60 Vancouver prostitutes. The alleged killing spree lasted for more than two decades. The 53-year-old showed little emotion as a judge ruled there was sufficient evidence to bring him to trial. In February of last year, his farm was raided by police. They used construction equipment to search the property for human remains. This week, police also began searching a swampy area 20 miles from his farm. The trial is expected to start next year and could last several months. On Wall Street, a late rally sent the major market averages into positive territory. The Dow Jones Industrial Average gained 35 points and finished at 91.94. The NASDAQ added 13 points to 17.19. The S&P 500 was up half a point to finish at 9.88. I'm Darren Copeland, and this is IE America Radio Network News.
Hi, I'm Bobby Likas with today's Carfenic Minute. What could the Lost in Space robot and Star Wars R2-D2 have in common with a phenomenon called dieseling? Will Robinson and Luke Skywalker know, and when I come back, I'll tell you.
Asphalt, rubber, metal, speed. This is Racing for Tony Stewart, Dale Earnhardt Jr., Matt Kenseth, and John Andretti. There's one more key to racing, Champion Spark Plugs. They race different makes of cars, Chevy, Pontiac, Dodge, Ford. But they all trust Champion because they all have the same destination, the winner's circle. Champion powers all.
Be sure to ask your service technician or auto parts retailer for Champion Spark Plugs.
Just like Will and Luke have some far-fetched friends to warn them of impending danger, your car has ways to warn you of the impending danger of neglected maintenance. One tune-up red flag is dieseling. Known as afterrun, dieseling occurs when an engine chugs on after the ignition is turned off. Causes? Inferior gas, excessive idle speed, and carbon in the combustion chamber. Dieseling is just one warning that, if neglected, may leave you lost in space. The space alongside the road. I'm Bobby Likas. Likas, you'll love us! Brought to you by Champion, the world's favorite spark plug.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network. Live from America's heartland, your humble and obedient servant, the man who says no to the flying monkey right, Mike Malloy.
And welcome to the IE America Radio Network today. I am Charlie Langton, sitting in for the vacationing Mike Malloy. He will be back shortly, but for the next 2 days, I'll be here taking your calls, of course, at 1-800-TALK-YES. That's 1-800-825-5937. Of course, we're on the website as well as at ieamericaradio.com. And, of course, if you're on the satellite, love to hear from you. Channel 145 of the Sirius. For the next 3 hours, we'll be talking about some of the issues facing the world today. Let me just tell you quickly what's coming up. In the second hour of this program, there was a new survey just released this week that says that 7 million Americans are victims of identity theft. We'll get an update from the head of the Federal Trade Commission as to what's going on about identity theft and what our federal government is doing. Are you in danger? Also, in the second hour of the show, we'll be talking about the state of immigration after September 11th. Between the Patriot Act and a lot of people don't like that, we'll get an update as to what's going on there. And then an amazing story coming up in the third hour of the program. Stay tuned. The topic, I guess I can only say easy, would be lynching. Now, what am I talking about? A gentleman in Atlanta has collected over the years pictures of actual lynchings. He's an antique dealer, but he collected all of these pictures. And they actually show vividly, descriptively, pictures of lynchings. What he did was he exhibited them, as to put a couple on an exhibit. The lines were out the door. People wanted to see this. He hooked up with Emory University, a bigger exhibit. Then he went to New York City, a bigger exhibit. And surprisingly, most of the people that want to see these pictures are African Americans. That's coming up in the third hour. We'll talk to the person that put this collection together and why lynching photographs are so popular. Amazing. We're going to kick off the first hour of the program with an amazing story. And when I first read this, I was thinking that I didn't think legally this was possible. But amazingly, an 8-year-old boy that's 8 years old has been charged in Michigan with rape. That's criminal sexual conduct. Actually, 4 counts of criminal sexual conduct. And it is true. This is believed to be the youngest person in the state anyway, an 8-year-old boy, to be charged with the felony of rape. Now, if he is convicted, he will be under court order or under the court's jurisdiction until 21 years of age. And also, it would subject this 8-year-old to registering with the sex registry, which in Michigan, you must, if you are convicted and you get out of prison, you must then register for the next 25 years. This happened, the allegations from what's been reported, was that this 8-year-old molested 4 7-year-old girls in school. The allegations were that they were watching the Mary Poppins movie in school, and apparently there was a molestation going on, and then I guess it carried on into the later part of the day. Anyway, a civil suit was filed by one of the victims' families, and then later the prosecutor got involved. Today I have in the studio here the attorney representing the 8-year-old boy, Richard Marcel, from Michigan, from Macomb County, to be more specific. Richard, thanks for being on the program. I appreciate this.
Good evening, Charlie. It's a pleasure.
Am I correct that this is the youngest person in at least the state of Michigan that we've been able to find out, that you've been able to find out, to actually be charged with a felony of rape?
Well, that's my understanding, Charlie, is that here in Macomb County and throughout the state, at least as the announcement of the charges against this young boy were presented, they were presented on the basis that he is, in fact, the youngest person to ever be charged with a felony criminal sexual assault.
In the Michigan paper, for the last week, I believe the formal charges. In fact, we just talked before we went on the air tonight that actually formal charges may have just been filed as recently as today, or in fact, some of the facts of the case are actually still coming out. But there seems to be an uproar in the media about whether an 8-year-old boy can realistically be charged with rape.
Well, there should be an uproar in the media, and there should be an uproar throughout our civilized society and in this community. The question is whether it's appropriate to charge someone this young with a crime that's, you know, typically reserved for persons who are much older.
Can you tell us, Attorney Richard Marcel, what happened that led to these criminal sexual conduct charges against your client, an 8-year-old boy?
Well, I represent the young boy, his mother, and the family. And as I understand the allegations, and they are allegations, and they're supported by the incident reports, which make up the basis for the charges. What I mean is they're supported by what the 7-year-old girls say.
These are the other victims. There are 4 victims in this, all 7-year-old victims.
There are 4 alleged victims who are girls in the classroom. That's correct. And but my understanding of the allegations...
Was the teacher in the classroom at the time?
It's my understanding that the teacher was there. The teacher, there's a question as to whether she was a little bit neglectful, whether she was had a control on the class, or whether she was one of those teachers who had basically let the class get a little bit out of her control, maybe had left the classroom or not. But she claims that she was testing another student while these molestations allegedly occurred.
So the teacher may have been actually out of the classroom.
We know that these incidents allegedly happened during the showing of a Mary Poppins movie in the elementary school. This is a second grade school in Mount Clemens, Michigan. It's what we call the north end.
What grade would this be then?
Second
grade.
Correct.
Okay.
And again, the allegations are that some of this sexual assault took place. But as I understand, 3 of the 4 charges have nothing to do with any fondling of any genitalia, et cetera, any nudity, et cetera. They have to do merely with what I would call horseplay between this boy and these other girls with clothing, fully clothed.
According to newspaper accounts, the boy, the 8-year-old boy, your client, apparently got on top of a 7-year-old, threatened to kill her if the girls did not cooperate. I don't quite know what that means, but, and then apparently took his hand and touched her private parts underneath the clothing. Is that
that's
the allegation? Is that true? Is that
that's whether it's true or not is something that remains to be seen. I would say that's the allegations, and that's also what's being widely reported. Many times in these cases, what we find is that the facts actually in the series of events actually took place may be somewhat different than that. But that's the sum and substance of what's being charged and alleged.
Just so we know, the crime of criminal sexual conduct, more commonly referred to as rape, there has to be an element of penetration. That means that somehow the prosecutor has to present proof that the girl's vaginal area was penetrated. It could be by anything. In this case, at least the allegations from what we hear in the papers or read in the papers, by the fingers of this 8-year-old boy.
Well, let's go back just a few steps here.
Sure.
and take the sort of the larger picture, because I want to place this incident in context. First of all, what I understand is that these events happened in the course of a single day, pretty much contemporaneously, on or around May 13th. So we're talking about, say, 2 months ago. My understanding is that the prosecutor's office here in Michigan I first looked at the allegations and said, really, this boy is too young to prosecute. He could not have formulated the intent of sexual gratification, which is one of the elements of the crime of criminal sexual conduct or rape, what used to be called rape.
There has to be an element of sexual gratification.
Correct, correct. And for that to occur,
what is that? I mean, this is a stupid question, but what does that mean? I mean, can it? Does an 8-year-old have to be aroused? Is that
that would be, I suppose, that would be a one indicia of gratification would be arousal. There's no evidence of that. It's not in. There's no evidence of that took place. Or it could be for the purpose of arousing the alleged victim. But in this case, there's no indication that the 7-year-old girls were supposedly being aroused. The reason I tell you. I say to go back and take this in context is this. We'll go back a step further. Go back 2 years now. This is where in announcing the charges, the prosecutor indicated that he wasn't interested in pursuing any sort of jail time or incarceration, any sort of real punishment for this child, that, in fact, this child, he announced, was a victim, that this 8-year-old boy was himself a victim. So here we have an 8-year-old being charged with rape.
Life felony, by the way. But because of the age, it only goes up to 21.
That's
correct. It is a life felony.
That's correct. It is a life felony.
But you're saying that the prosecutor in the case has already made the statement that he does not want to incarcerate this boy, but the prosecutor believes that this actually 8-year-old boy is a victim.
That's correct. He called him a victim, and he did so based on this, that what had happened is that this boy has it's not his natural father, but a gentleman who is the father of his stepsister, his half-sister. And this boy, this 8-year-old boy, was apparently 2 years ago exposed to pornography in this man's home during visitation, was exposed to a 13-year-old girl watching pornography and asking the boy to have sex with her. And he was also exposed to
a power of attorney kit that includes all the required forms. Order today and we'll include the new Family Legal Guide. It answers all your questions about small claims court, landlord agreements, personal bankruptcy, and much more. An $80 value, the complete Master Estate Kit costs only $39.95. For immediate delivery of the Master Estate Kit and your free Family Legal Guide, call 1-800-221-0393. Pay only $39.95 plus shipping. Every kit carries an unlimited money-back guarantee. Call 1-800-221-0393 now. That's 1-800-221-0393.
Show. We are very lucky tonight to have joining us from California, Geneva, BartCop.com's resident astrologer. Can you tell us anything about George W. Bush's chart?
There was a lot of stuff in his chart. He's got a lot of aspects on his own that would indicate that he would be easily maneuvered into being a puppet, a front man, or people who have more of a scheme in mind like that.
He is a very weak man when you get right down to it, isn't he?
Yes, he is.
Extremely weak-willed. What sort of looming obstacles might keep Bush from being reelected? Is he going to face some sort of impeachment, criminal charges? Can you elaborate?
Well, that would be nice. I mean,
it would.
If they did it to Clinton with as little as they had to go on.
Oh, my God.
Why not?
The Mike Malloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
At Animal Talk, we think deep thoughts. We think about things that most people don't think about, such as, do dogfish chase catfish? Do jellyfish taste good with peanut butter? These are things that bother us. Why is it that Donald Duck doesn't wear any pants, but when he comes out of the shower, he wraps a towel around his waist?
Dude, you need a hobby.
Oh.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
Standing up to the flying monkey right, it's more of Mike Malloy.
And I'm Charlie Langton here, sitting in for Mike Malloy today on the IE America Radio Network. Join us in our talk today, 1-800-TALK. Yes, that's our number, 1-800-825-5937. We're talking about whether an 8-year-old boy should be charged with rape. If you don't believe it, it is happening right now in the state of Michigan. That's right. An 8-year-old boy accused of sexual misconduct. It is believed to be the youngest person ever, at least in the state of Michigan, charged with 4 counts of criminal sexual conduct. Joining me in the studio is his attorney, Richard Marcel. He represents the 8-year-old. I should say that we are not going to name the 8-year-old. There's no reason for it. The concept here is, why is an 8-year-old being charged with rape? The prosecutor in the case, whom we hope to get on the air, by the way, later on in this broadcast, and we'll ask him directly, but the prosecutor, Carl Marlinga, has made the statement that he wants to help the child. He wants to help this 8-year-old, whom he calls a victim, is using the criminal justice system, the rape system. Is that the way to help this person? 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937. Let's go to the phones right now. We have Nikki from Alabama. You're on the program. Hello, Nikki.
Hi, how are y'all?
Good.
As the mother of a child who was sexually assaulted, the first thing that came to mind before it was even mentioned was, you know, surely this child is a victim too, and I'm just ashamed of the prosecutor for prosecuting this child and not really helping the child. I'm also a future social worker, so I guess I think about it from more of a standpoint, that's more neutral as opposed to just the parent of a victim.
That's a good point, Nikki. But do you think that the child, I mean, again, we don't know the facts, and because the case is ongoing, there's limitations as to what we can say. But if we believe what we read in the newspapers, which sometimes we do, sometimes we don't, the allegations were that he did touch at least the private area, the genital area of the 7-year-old girl. So we may have five victims here.
Well, yes, and the girl is still a victim, no doubt, but I just feel that 8 years old is too young to be prosecuted. My son was actually perpetrated by a 14-year-old, and he happened to be a cousin, and that was very hard from a family standpoint, but also from the standpoint that if it had happened here in Alabama, he wouldn't have been able to be prosecuted because they don't prosecute children under 15 here in Alabama.
Attorney Richard Marcel?
You make a good point, Nikki, and let me amplify something else, too, which is that, first of all, the idea that this boy needs help, it's correct. He needs rehabilitation. He needs to be monitored. He needs some intensive therapy and counseling for other aggressive behavior patterns and acting out issues that he has, sort of separately and apart from these assaults. But that could be done. You mentioned, you're in social work. That can be done outside of the criminal justice system. It can be done outside. can be done outside the juvenile courts. This child is going
to
be branded.
It needs to be done outside of the criminal justice system for a child that young.
And
if he were 13 or 14 years old, I would probably feel differently about this. And maybe that's just because my child was perpetrated by a child that age. Maybe it's because it hasn't been too many years, 15, 16 years ago, that I was that age. And I remember at 12 or 13, 14, I understood what was going on. But at 8, I mean, there's just no way. I just don't feel that there's any way that there was any intent there, and I'm just ashamed of the prosecutor for trying to prosecute this child.
Well, the second part of your what you've touched on is also important, and that's with respect to the differences between Alabama and Michigan. We have a problem here in Michigan that I think that the legislature really ought to be addressing, and that the prosecutor's trying to sort of put a square peg in a round hole by bringing this case, which is that we don't have, under our series of statutes for criminal sexual conduct, and we ought to, some sort of differential between the actor, so this would be like the defendant, the person who did it, we call the
right.
actor, and the victim. There needs to be some sort of age differential, 2 years, 4 years, 5 years, before you can lay certain degrees of charges. We had a case here in Michigan not too long ago where this was very, very well highlighted, which was we had one person who was under by age by a couple days.
Hold on. Let me hold that thought for a moment. I'm going to get to you. Nikki, thanks for the call. Stay with us. I'm going to let Attorney Richard Marcel answer that. We've got to take a quick break here. We're on the IE America Radio Network. I'm Charlie Langton. 1-800-TALK-YES. Should an 8-year-old boy be charged with rape?
Right now, it's nighttime. You're starving, and there are people at Denny's just like you. Except for one thing. See, they're not starving. They just ordered a plate of steamy little mini burgers. Oh, here comes a big plate of hot, zesty nachos. Mmm! You know, there's one more difference between you and them. Yeah, see, they're having fun. Denny's, a good place to sit and eat.
You're listening to The Mike Malloy Show, 9 p.m. till midnight, Eastern Time, Monday through Friday on IE America Radio Network.
For the IE America Radio Network, this is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Hamilton.
And I'm Laura Miller. A huge strike is looming in South Africa, where unions representing gold and coal miners have voted to strike on Sunday unless they reach agreement with mining companies on a new contract that guarantees a raise and preserves benefits. Months of intense mediation haven't brought the two sides closer to a deal, and the miners' unions have declared a deadlock with more than three-quarters of the country's coal and gold mining companies. If a strike takes place, as many as 160,000 people could hit the picket lines.
New evidence, the high-tech industry is joining the manufacturing sector in pursuit of cheap overseas labor. A conference call of top IBM officials recorded last March was recently leaked to the Washington Alliance of Technology Workers. In the call, Tom Lynch, IBM's Director for Global Employee Relations, argues to fellow managers that his company must fire U.S. workers only to replace them with cheaper labor in countries like India, Russia, and China.
Services like accounting and financial services. There are companies that realize that there are lots of skills in places like India to do accounting for a fraction of what the costs are in the U.S. IT support and services, similarly. Why do you have to talk to someone in your own country?
Lynch acknowledges the decision to outsource IBM's U.S. operations will meet resistance, but says executives must steel their resolve to cut labor costs by any means necessary.
One of our challenges that we deal with every day is trying to balance what the business needs to do versus the impact on people. We don't want to sit back and say, don't do it, because it's going to be problems. Our competitors are doing it, and we have to do it.
Lynch also suggests that laid-off employees could be tapped to train their overseas replacements.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Do you dig your dog, but your dog digs your rose bushes?
Does Hole in the Head have your Oscar?
Is your cat doing a Tarzan swing from your drapes?
Is your python pooped?
Do you hate your folks because they spent your college tuition on a European vacation?
Jamie, what does that have to do with animals?
I don't know. I kind of ran out of stuff.
Now, come on, this is a commercial for a major radio network. We can do better.
Animal Talk, Sunday night on the IE America Radio Network.
Hi,
truth seekers, this is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive, political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES. Truth seekers celebrate. Right wingers beware. More of Mike Malloy.
Charlie Lighton today sitting in for the vacationing Mike Malloy. Join us here on the IE America Radio Network. That's 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937. We're also on the website at ieamericaradio.com. And we're also on the satellite feed, Sirius. That's channel 145. We are all over the place. We're talking today, at least in this segment, about whether or not an 8-year-old boy should be charged with rape. It is a case that is happening in Macomb County, Michigan. That's true. What is believed to be the youngest person ever charged with a felony, or at least a sexual felony, in the state, 8-year-old boy, he is accused of fondling and actually penetrating 4 7-year-old girls, I guess, in school. This happened, obviously, a couple of months ago while school was in session. The first part of the assault occurred during a Mary Poppins movie, and it was continued later on in the day. But just this week, the prosecutor did make the criminal charges. Joining me in the studio is the 8-year-old's attorney, Richard Marcel. And I believe that we're going to get the prosecutor on the line as well. Richard Marcel, your client, you represent the 8-year-old. You think that the prosecutors admitted that the 8-year-old was a victim, but you have a problem, though, with the law, the heavy hand of the law, with this a major felony to try to get this particular boy some help. Why is that?
That's correct. Well, I think that one of the questions you have to raise is whether the aims and purposes of the criminal, the penal code, the criminal law, criminal justice system are being served when you have a situation with such a young actor as this young boy. I think, as I made the remark before, I think it's like trying to fit a square peg into a round hole, and you're trying to utilize this for such a young person. I don't think that it's appropriate. Certainly lesser charges could have been brought, which wouldn't brand him to the degree of a felon that are being brought. And I worry and I am concerned that, and it is a discretionary call, with the prosecutor, with law enforcement. But I worry and concern that there will be a sort of a ratcheting downward of the minimum or the threshold age or really intent that we have by which we bring charges against young children. We used to talk about criminal charges being brought against teenagers and how sad that was. Now we have charges being brought against children. When are we going to have toddlers? Are we going to have, at what point do you cease that?
I just read a story. Actually, ABC News just put out a poll that said that our children are being exposed to sexual conduct at too early an age. And they cite a number of examples I won't go into right now, but there's no doubt because of television, because of a lot of things, that our children are being exposed at an earlier age than perhaps we were exposed to. I understand right now the prosecutor of the county, Macomb County in Michigan, Carl Marlinga, is on the line. If I could talk to Mr. Marlinga. I understand, Mr. Marlinga, that you're the one. It was your call to bring rape charges or criminal sexual conduct charges against the 8-year-old boy. Why such a tough charge, Mr. Marlinga?
In juvenile court, the question is not the standard thing that you look at in adult court. The ultimate question is, has the child done something for which he needs the services of the juvenile court? And I think that the answer is yes.
But could you have accomplished the same purpose without the charge of rape or criminal sexual conduct?
Well, and we still can. I mean, when you go in, rather than start with a fiction with something that did not really happen and have kind of a phony charge that everybody understands something more serious happened, but you don't want to say it, at least initially. You then run into the problem that if in the later development of this child something else happens, you've already phonied up the record the first time around. I would much rather do as I did in this case, which is to say, the child needs help. Let's take him into the juvenile court. Let's place on the initial record what the actual conduct was. And then if the rehabilitation services work as we hope and trust that they will, we can always bring the charges down to a non-sex crime so he won't have to sign up as a sex offender and all of the other consequences. We're hoping to get him the help he needs and have rehabilitation declared in the shortest time possible.
Kind of like listing a house. You don't list your house for the lowest price that you'd take. You'd list the house for the highest price you take. Just like
it's kind of like that. But I mean, I think what we're talking about is dealing in the truth that we do have four victims. We do have a child who was victimized himself 2 years earlier when he was six, and we have other experience with young offenders when they are victimized at that age. They continue through their teens to have a problem with recidivating and doing this again to other children as they act out and try to overcome and get a handle of what happened to them. And so it just seemed to me that because sexually dysfunctional adolescence is what this young man faces, that rather than dummy up the charge to sound like something that it isn't, we should at least have the court records reflect what it is going in, and then if we're successful in rehabilitation, we'll of course clear that record, and hopefully he'll reach adulthood with no juvenile record whatsoever.
Let me just get a break in here. We're talking to the prosecutor in Michigan who just brought charges, rape charges, against an 8-year-old boy. Also joining me in the studio is the attorney for the 8-year-old boy. My number is 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937. Let me get a call right here. Robin from West Virginia, you're on the line.
Oh, thank you, gentlemen. I'm glad you could take a call. Your producer didn't indicate whether or not you'd be able to do so. I think it's interesting that you've got both sides on because that's kind of rare.
Very, very rare. I thank both the prosecutor of the county and the defense attorney for being in the studio. Maybe we can resolve this case.
Well, I think it's certainly brave on both their parts. I'll be honest. I've had experience both as defense counsel and as prosecution, and this is highly disturbing. At least it would be within West Virginia law.
What disturbs you, Robin?
Well, first of all, the thing that was mentioned before the break, the idea that there's no discrimination factor of age difference.
That was Mr. Marcel's point of view.
Yeah, I think that's a flaw in our statutes as they are currently, as they currently stand. I think.
Yeah, but unfortunately, you're married to it right now.
That's correct.
But the prosecutor, Mr. Marlinga, you could have charged. Well, I think he answered the question. He could have charged this child with a non-sexual charge of assault and battery. He didn't. He decided to shoot high and negotiate later is what I'm hearing.
Well, and I do understand that because God knows I've done that too.
All right, Robin, let me get. Thank you. I appreciate the call.
Well, could I ask a question?
Sure. Go ahead. Please? Go ahead.
You both seem to have a pre-established set of ideas as to where either one of you would prefer for it to go. But I guess the question I would ask is doesn't the judge remain the joker in the deck? In terms of any agreement that you might reach or anything as to disposition of the case?
Well, Mr. Marlinga could certainly answer that, but I will say...
You can't bind the judge, can you?
But let me say this.
Mr. Marcel,
go ahead. We're actually, I think, and I'm enlightened or pleased to hear Mr. Marlinga speak in the way that he's speaking in terms of rehabilitation to an early degree. That is good news to me, and I think we're actually much closer in terms of where we want to resolve this. We're not going to resolve it on air, Charlie, unfortunately.
Hold on, we're obviously
compatible in terms of our goals where we want this boy to be. We just have different notions of whether he should be charged and to what degree.
Let me ask you this, Mr. Marlinga. Rob, Robin, I appreciate the call from West Virginia. Thank you. Let me just get Mr. Marlingo, if I could. What do you have, and what's your thinking now, early on in the case, as to what type of punishment, should we say, would be appropriate for what this 8-year-old boy did?
Well, first of all, in Michigan law, the prosecutor will remain in charge of the charging decision, and so the judge cannot stop me from bringing the charges down to something lesser or dismissing entirely. I mean, there are rare cases where a prosecutor could be checked, but in this type of situation, I will remain in charge of the charges. I missed your question, Charlie. What were you asking?
Well, what's your thought though right now? I mean, if you're thinking, because you've said in the papers and you've said on the program here that you think this boy needs rehabilitation, he needs some help. He
right.
is a victim, as are the 7-year-olds.
Right.
But what's your thought about some type of resolution to this, or what type of rehabilitation are you talking about, Mr. Marlinga?
Well, first of all, understand that the reason that the charges come at all is that this is a single parent family, and the mother, and I know this, you know, people don't have the entire facts in front of them, but the mother basically has done nothing wrong. She has done nothing for us to file a petition against her alleging neglect or abuse or something to bring her and the child under the jurisdiction of the court because of something that she did wrong. And so we were left with doing nothing at all. There's a diversion statute in the state, but it doesn't allow for a pre-charge diversion if the crime is an assaultive crime, and whether it be assault and battery or criminal sexual conduct, that's one of the specified crimes for which we cannot use a diversion program, meaning that of the bad choices that were left to us, we were left with doing this or doing nothing at all. Or I suppose there was that middle ground of going in with a much lower charge that did not reflect the reality. But the problem with that is that, as I said, that it's very hard to predict what's going to happen with children who have been victimized themselves. And I thought that the counselors should have, you know, the full weight of the full charge to start out with.
But do you have any ideas as we sit here today about what type of penalty or what type of rehabilitation?
Well, we don't want a penalty. We don't want a punishment. We don't want him taken away from the home. We don't want him taken out of school, for God's sakes. This is just a kid. What we want, though, is for the counselors to concentrate on the sexual dysfunction that he is going to be facing. He acted this out once. Remember, he's already been in therapy. His mom put him in therapy about a year and a half ago for an entire year, and then she took him out because it didn't seem to be doing any good. And so we needed something more than just the private pay.
Let me ask a defense attorney, Mr. Marcel. From what I'm hearing from Prosecutor Carl Marlinga of Michigan here, from Macomb County, he wants some type of structured rehabilitation, some structured counseling that would give some help to your client. Would you agree to that, Mr. Marcel?
I don't think we're going to really have any issue with that. What we wanted to bring to, and I think Mr. Marlinga is aware of that, was the reason for the behavior, the background, and as I said previously, this boy mimicking essentially behavior from other adults that he had seen. And I guess
he needs help. I mean, this 8-year-old needs help.
To what degree remains to be seen?
Counseling?
But correct.
Counseling?
Certainly.
He's already had some, but maybe some better structure.
Therapy, absolutely.
Maybe with the court's guidance?
Well, I tell you, we have a program called the JSORP program, the Juvenile Sexual Offender Reentry Program. And to be eligible for it, you normally have to be 10 years of age, but we've talked to the counselors, and they will take this 8-year-old boy because they realize the importance of this case. In order to be eligible for it, you have to be charged in the system, which is another reason why we had to charge him. We're trying to create something that is almost there but really isn't normally there for an 8-year-old because it's too young for their program normally to reach. But those counselors are very adept at treating young children with this type of a problem.
Let me see if I can sneak a call in here. We're talking whether or not an 8-year-old boy should be charged with rape. It is being charged in Michigan. 1-800-TALK-YES. That's the number here. 1-800-825-5937. Bhaskar from Cambridge, Massachusetts. You're on the line.
Hi. I'm enjoying the show, and thank you for talking to me.
You're very welcome.
I'm kind of worried about this in the following way. First of all, I think I don't even know what rape by an 8-year-old boy is. And if his mother determines that therapy is not okay, you know, maybe there is a pediatrician or a mental health worker who may be better qualified than the district attorney. I mean, it just seems like clearly there must be better targets for prosecution. I mean, this is just, I think anywhere else, I think this would be laughed out.
Well, you've hit on an important point, which is, and you mentioned the word targets, and I want to say this and throw this out there and, in a sense, ask the prosecutor as well.
Go ahead, Mr. Marcel, defense attorney.
The question is, you know, it kind of goes to what I was saying before, which is at what point do you make or stop making children all around this country, in every suburb, and in every neighborhood. My neighborhood, for example, in my subdivision, summer barbecues, and there are every week that goes by, I hear of something that happened between some of the children in our neighborhood. I remember back when I was 8, 9, 10, 11 years old, we used to call it horseplay. I'm not saying that...
Good thing Mr. Marlinga wasn't around then, Rick Marcel.
I'm not saying that this case, you know, involved horseplay. It might have been something more serious. That remains to be seen. I'm not suggesting that, but I'm saying that there's a lot of this, you know, some people have approached me and said, well, what about playing doctor between children? At what point do you stop making some of these children targets, and where do you draw lines, and where do you utilize the discretion? And I think it's going to be a problem. I mean,
is this something the legislature should take up, or do you think that the prosecutors have too much discretion in charging? Obviously, nobody can tell Mr. Marlinga, the prosecutor, what to do as far as the charging goes. Sentencing is a different story.
No,
but the discretion.
I'm not just saying this to be flip or anything, but I really think that, you know, theoretically, in any county around here, any populated county, you could probably charge 3,000 of these cases next year if you wanted to. I mean, I'm not saying that to be cavalier or flip, but I think, seriously, you could find enough cases of children on children at these ages to the point where you could charge them all with the sexual conduct assault cases of this degree.
Mr. Marlinga, I think what the caller and I think what the defense attorney is saying basically is that this could be an epidemic, that now people will be worried, and the principals of all the schools around here will say, hey, we're going to charge these kids with rape, and there could be a lot of cases pending in the courthouse for what really may not be rape in the sense. I've got to take a break. Hold on with me. I'm with the county prosecutor in Michigan who charged an 8-year-old boy with rape. I'm also in the studio joined by the 8-year-old's defense attorney. I'm Charlie Langton, and this is the IE America Radio Network.
Right now, it's nighttime. You're starving, and there are people at Denny's just like you. Except for one thing. See, they're not starving. They just ordered a plate of steamy little mini burgers. Oh, here comes a big plate of hot, zesty nachos. Mmm! You know, there's one more difference between you and them. Yeah, see, they're having fun. Denny's, a good place to sit and eat.
What magazine was the late Senator Paul Wellstone talking about when he said, at a time of growing media concentration, this magazine is an invaluable source of news and information that corporate media would too often prefer to ignore? He was talking about In These Times, a bi-weekly magazine of news, politics, and culture. In These Times has won more Project Censored awards than any other magazine. For 27 years, In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of the labor movement, feminism, grassroots politics, and minority communities. If getting a perspective other than what's in the mainstream media is important to you, In These Times is essential reading. In the words of best-selling author Barbara Ehrenreich, to people who say they're sick and tired of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated news media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Do it now and find out what you're missing. Look for In These Times in bookstores near you or visit them on the web at www.inthesetimes.com. That's www.inthesetimes.com.
Do you want to own a computer but have less than perfect credit? Bad credit? No credit? No problem.
If you have a checking or savings account and can afford a payment of as little as $35 a week for just 12 months, Blue Hippo Funding says you're approved. Guaranteed. You heard right. You're approved for a brand new name brand computer. Call 1-800-823-0157 right now. If you can afford a payment of as little as $35 a week for just 12 months and have a checking or savings account, you're already approved. Guaranteed. Call 1-800-823-0157 right now and tell us where you want your brand new name brand computer delivered. If you can afford $35 a week for just 12 months and have a checking or savings account, your brand new state-of-the-art PC will be on its way. Guaranteed. Bad credit, no problem. Blue Hippo Funding says you're approved for the computer of your dreams. Guaranteed. Call right now, 1-800-823-0157.
Do the Republicans or the Democrats have a clear vision for America that actually includes democracy, fairness, and justice? Do the Greens or the Progressives? How can we create a shared vision of the kind of future we want for our children? This is Tom Hartman, and I'll be exploring these and many other issues with guests from a wide variety of viewpoints, as well as taking your calls.
The Tom Hartman Show, 12 p.m. till 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
The following program is recommended for mature individuals and may contain material unsuitable for morons, cretins, and dishwipes.
Hey, I wanted to say dick dick.
Okay, give me your anaconda. I'll give you my dick dick.
Deal!
Anaconda! Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
All right, boys, come on.
Get things in my mind, and I say, let's try this.
Dude,
and
there's Nancy in the background.
Nancy.
Oh,
hey, Nancy.
Am I on the air?
Oh.
Hello.
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 Sorry.
You're sorry you're on the air?
I'm glad I didn't say something I really shouldn't have said.
Really?
You should have heard what she was telling me a minute ago.
Wow.
Bite me, doughboy. On the IE America Radio Network.
The following program is recommended for mature individuals and may contain material unsuitable for morons, cretins, and dishwipes.
Hey, I wanted to say dick dick.
Okay, give me your anaconda. I'll give you my dick dick.
Deal!
Anaconda! Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
All right, boys, come on.
Believe in truth. Are you tired of right-wing rhetoric? Here's Mike Malloy.
I'm Charlie Langton sitting in today. We are talking about whether or not an 8-year-old boy should be charged with rape. We've got the defense attorney, the attorney representing the 8-year-old boy. We also have the county prosecutor who is bringing the charges. Mr. Marlinga, I only have a moment or so. I will ask you, county prosecutor making the charges, where do we go from here?
Okay, first of all, Charlie, you're a friend, and I love you dearly, but you're hyping this a little bit much by calling it rape. It's an insertion of his finger into a private part. It's not sexual intercourse. We're not calling it rape. And remember, what we're talking about is ultimately getting help for this young man. This was the only procedural path that I had that would assure that he would get the continued help. And I do intend, if we are successful in the rehabilitation efforts, to bring the charges down to a non-sex type of crime so this won't show up on his record. But you have to remember that in this case, I mean, first of all, we've never charged anybody this young before, and God willing, we never will again. But it was a combination of the fact that there was sexual contact with four different 7-year-old girls. There were threats of violence and death, so that he's got already in his young mind a linkage between acts of violence and sex. And I'm not going to go into the full panoply of what he was exposed to when he was six, but if you knew it, you would recognize that this
is progressive political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the internet, and Sirius satellite channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call, 1-800-TALK-YES.
about the Mike Malloy program. You know, the reason I turned this man off...
Why?
...is because he sounds like an 8-year-old.
Me?
Name calling.
I'm not an 8-year-old. I'm not.
You should get somebody who at least has some intelligence.
No, don't fire me. No. I got kids in college.
The Mike Malloy Show, weekdays from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Time on IE America Radio Network.
This is IE America Radio Network News. I'm Darren Copeland. Two people are dead following a shooting today at City Hall in New York. One of the victims has been identified as 41-year-old Councilman James Davis, a former police officer and strong anti-violence advocate. The second victim is the gunman. The incident took place just as a city council meeting was getting underway. Witnesses say they saw a man in a blue suit pull out a gun in the balcony and open fire. One councilman reported hearing 20 to 30 shots, saying the scene looked like a war zone. Mayor Michael Bloomberg was in the building at the time but was unhurt. He told reporters the act was not terrorism. A military expert at the Naval War College in Newport, Rhode Island, says the troops responsible for killing Saddam Hussein's sons in Iraq did their mission extremely well.
This tip came in less than 24 hours before the entire raid was planned and executed in an urban environment with several different units coming together in a very difficult tactical problem, and was just executed superbly. And that's a testament not only to their skill, but to the morale of these fine troops that are in Iraq.
Professor John Ballard says it's important to note that the source of the tip was an Iraqi citizen. Ballard says the deaths of Hussein's sons marks the end of any possible Hussein regime. Ballard says the downside to the sons' deaths is that a great deal of intelligence information was lost. Republicans are reacting to comments by a state Democratic lawmaker overheard in Sacramento Monday that suggested the budget crisis might help their cause. Congressman Christopher Cox of Newport Beach says the news isn't good.
Now what we are finding is that secretly among themselves they're saying, hey, this business of not being able to pass a budget, this is good for us because now we can get rid of the requirement that voters have something to say about tax increases in our state.
The conversation was unintentionally broadcast due to an open microphone in the meeting chamber.
Smokers, now you can break the nicotine habit safely, effectively, and naturally within 7 days, guaranteed. And now you can quit smoking for good without craving, side effects, irritability, or weight gain with an amazing new product called Smoke Free. Smoke Free consists of three herbal supplements that work together to completely and naturally eliminate your body's cravings for nicotine. Smoke Free replenishes vital nutrients as it counteracts the effects of nicotine without the use of dangerous drugs or patches. Your mood, nervous
on, and take off.
What's it made of?
Block It Fabric by Kimberly Clark. Great protection at a great value.
Take it from people who love their cars. Buy a car cover made from Block It Fabric by Kimberly Clark.
Sex and the single driver is a favorite feature of insurance companies. And if you're a middle-aged, married female, you're the star of this show. Yes, statistics show younger drivers are involved in more fatalities than mature adults. And singles have less safe driving records than those in wedding bliss. And here's the clincher, gentlemen. Males are deadlier drivers than females. In fact, a National Safety Council survey found fatal accident rates were 63% higher for men. So ladies, start your engines and enjoy the spotlight. I'm Bobby Likas. Like us, you'll love us.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network. Live from America's heartland, your humble and obedient servant, the man who says no to the flying monkey right, Mike Malloy.
And welcome to the program. Welcome on this beautiful day here. I'm Charlie Langton, sitting in for the vacationing Mike Malloy. I'll be back tomorrow, and of course, Mike will be back soon enough. Thank you for tuning in. Our numbers here, as always, on the IE America Radio Network, 1-800-TALK-YES. That's 1-800-825-5937. Of course, we're on the website at ieamericaradio.com. We're also on the satellite feed, Sirius Left. That's channel 145. Let me just tell you what's coming up in the next hour of this program. We're going to talk to a gentleman who has been involved with the unbelievable story. He collected pictures of lynchings. He collected these. He's not a... He happened to stumble across these pictures. What happened was that back in the turn of the centuries, and mostly in the South, of course, lynchings went on, and they were photographed, and for the most part, they were put on the back of postcards. These postcards were shipped to friends, and in large part were destroyed, or in large part really were kind of, it's kind of an, it was an underground, but they've surfaced, and this gentleman that'll be on the program collected these. He put these into a book and into an art exhibit. And amazingly, the crowds of people that wanted to see this were astounding. And for the most part, the audience is African American. It's an amazing story that's coming up in the second hour, the next hour of this program. You will not want to miss this fascinating, and I'll tell you, very truthfully, very disturbing story about this part in our history. It's coming up in just a little while. Also, in the second half of this hour, we'll be talking about the immigration and the state of immigration after 9/11. Has the government gone too far? Has the Patriot Act allowed our government to detain people, immigrants, for sometimes no reason, to cause all kinds of disruption in the families, when the evidence to hold these people are minimal to nothing? That's coming up second hour of this particular segment of the program. There was a study that just came out that said that 7 million Americans have been victims of identity theft. This is according to a survey that just came out. Gartner is the technical research group that actually conducted the survey. And what is shocking about the 7 million Americans who have been victims of identity theft, more so, is that the thieves, the people who do this identity theft, have about only a 1 in 700 chance of being caught by the authorities. Identity theft is when you use somebody's personal information, like a social security number or a bank account or something along those lines, and then you take that and then you use it for your own illegal activity. Well, there is some hope on the way. The Federal Trade Commission has a unit that is now working closely with the FBI and other law enforcement agencies to, at least, if nothing else, warn consumers about the scams that are going on, and hopefully to try and bring some prosecutions in this amazing problem that is facing the United States today. Joining me on the line is Joanna Crane, and she is head of the Identity Theft Unit of the Federal Trade Commission. Joanna Crane, thank you for being on the program, first of all.
My pleasure, Charlie.
Did I overstate this? The Gartner study came out with saying 7 million Americans are victims of identity theft. Do you believe those numbers?
Well, Charlie, you may have understated it. What it said was that 7 million Americans became victims of identity theft in the past year.
Oh, my goodness.
In a 12-month period, and this was conducted sometime recently, I would say, between April and June at some point. So it's 7 million adults in a 12-month period becoming victims of identity theft.
Why do you think that identity theft has become such a prevalent crime and problem in America today?
Well, let me just give you a little bit of a background on whether the 7 million is accurate or not. Of course, Gartner is an extremely well-respected research firm, and I'm sure that their methodology is solid. The conventional wisdom up until this study and another recent study came out was that the number was closer to something like 1 million Americans a year. So you can see that we're all taken a bit by surprise with the most recent consumer research, which is showing many orders of magnitude greater than what we had thought.
Sure.
The reason identity theft has grown to such great proportions, although I guess we don't know exactly where between 1 million and 7 million it exactly is at this point, but it has grown for a couple of reasons. Information is much more easily collected and disseminated now that so much personal information is on the Internet or in databases housed in financial institutions where thieves can either hack in or break in or may in fact be working for the company and get a hold of that information and then get out and use it to commit identity theft or to sell it on the underground market for other people to commit identity theft.
So this is more of an Internet problem then.
Well, I think that it's a database issue. It's just that so much information is compacted into neat, efficient database chunks that can be easily transported and disseminated. It's a computerization itself has facilitated the growth of identity theft. The Internet and the telephone have also made our economy much less of a face-to-face, you know your banker, know your grocer type of economy. Now it's much more anonymous. You can get a mortgage online. You can do your banking online. So no one is going to be able to really authenticate you in an online situation if you're impersonating someone else and you have all of their key personal information. It's very hard for them to realize that you are not who you say you are.
I'm talking to Joanna Crane. She's the head of the Identity Theft Unit of the Federal Trade Commission. I really appreciate the time and talking about this. But Ms. Crane, do you trust yourself? Would you get a mortgage today on the Internet?
I would not. I would not because I actually want to be able to talk to the merchant who I'm dealing with and find out how he or she handles my personal information. How are they going to maintain the files? How are they going to dispose of them? Who will have access to them? Because I'm concerned about how businesses maintain my information, and I want to be able to look someone in the eye and have that conversation.
What about, like, I shouldn't say, but like an Amazon.com, you buy books, I mean, they're commercial, but what the heck? I mean, they're very prevalent. People know about that. Would you trust that organization?
Certainly. I would trust most any of the organizations, and I think that buying things online, as long as you're going through a secure socket layer to do an encrypted transaction, is perfectly safe. And I certainly do order from companies such as Amazon. But when it comes to major investment purchases, I would really like to try and have a personal relationship to the extent possible with the company that I'm dealing with. So I'm not the type of person who's going to do that online.
I've got here from the Federal Trade Commission, your employer, I guess.
Yes, sir.
The top 10 categories of consumer fraud complaints in the year 2002. Number one complaint was Internet auctions by quite a bit. And then Internet services and computer complaints goes down. That was 13% for the auction, 6% Internet services, and then advanced fee loans, credit protection. Auctions, are they really bad? Does that consume a lot of your identity theft and those types of problems?
Well, actually, the identity theft complaints come in on a separate hotline. And actually, if you take all of the complaints together that the Federal Trade Commission received, including those about Internet auctions, et cetera, 43% of our complaints involved identity theft. So it is by far and away the largest single type of complaint that we receive. Internet auctions are a type of consumer fraud that may or may not involve identity theft. It can be something as simple as someone promising to ship you something and then not shipping it. There is a lot of identity theft now taking place in the Internet auction world because identity thieves are impersonating buyers, sellers, the PayPal type organizations that are sort of escrow organizations. So when you provide perhaps some personal information to an organization, you need to make sure that it really is whom you think you're dealing with, because the identity thieves do an excellent job of impersonating online companies, including ISPs like AOL. One of the biggest scams out right now is that you may get a message on your desktop saying that AOL needs to get your credit card number right away or they're going to close your account because they believe you may be a victim of identity theft. So thinking that you're going to get help from being a victim, you go to the web page. It has all the AOL logo. It has all the AOL links on it.
Sure.
If you enter your information, it's going to be transmitted to an identity thief. So, yes, Internet auctions consume an enormous amount of resources from the Federal Trade Commission, as does other types of Internet fraud.
I read a statistic by the Gartner Research Group that said that only about 1 in 700 people, or that's the ratio of being caught, is 1 in 700. That can't be right.
Well, that's being caught and tried by the feds. State and local governments are extremely active in investigating and prosecuting identity thieves as well. And Gartner was not able to compile that information. And in fact, I don't know of any organization that has been able to do so thus far. So while it may be, if it's true that there are 7 million in a year, somewhere near 1 in 7 million to be brought to justice by the federal government, I think the chances are much stronger than that the criminals will be caught and brought to justice by state or local.
Now, do you get involved? You get involved with the FBI then? What are you, the Federal Trade Commission then? Does that provide the data or the collection or that type of thing? And then you work with the other authorities, the more prosecutorial authorities like the FBI, the U.S. Attorney's Office, that type of thing?
That's right. The Secret Service, U.S. Postal Inspection Service, FBI, and Social Security Administration all are very active in investigating identity theft, each in their own particular jurisdiction. The Federal Trade Commission's complaints cover the jurisdiction of the complaints we receive from victims cover all those jurisdictions, so we share with all of those law enforcement agencies the information about suspects in our database to help them broaden and deepen their investigations and move them along quicker.
All right, stay with me for just another moment here. Joanna Crane is with us. She is the head of the Identity Theft Unit of the Federal Trade Commission, talking about a recent survey. Actually, the survey just came out this week. 7 million Americans this year, or the last 12 months anyway, have been victims of identity theft. 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937. I'm Charlie Langton.
Right now, it's nighttime. You're starving, and there are people at Denny's just like you. Except for one thing. See, they're not starving. They just ordered a plate of steamy little mini burgers. Oh, here comes a big plate of hot, zesty nachos. Mmm! You know, there's one more difference between you and them. Yeah, see, they're having fun. Denny's, a good place to sit and eat.
Hello, Dental Group. Ms. Cole?
Uh-huh.
Sounds like a nasty toothache. Aren't you on vacation?
Camping.
Well, for temporary relief until you see the dentist, get maximum strength Ambisol.
Ambisol?
The same pain reliever in the same strength the dentist rubs on gums to start relieving pain on contact.
Oh, really?
You can't get stronger pain relief without a prescription. Use only as directed.
Ambisol?
Yes, Ms. Cole. Maximum strength Ambisol. Dentist strong, so the pain is gone.
Do you want to own a computer but have less than perfect credit, bad credit, no credit? No problem. If you have a checking or savings account and can afford a payment of as little as $35 a week for just 12 months, Blue Hippo Funding says you're approved, guaranteed. You heard right. You're approved for a brand new name brand computer. Call 1-800-823-0157 right now. If you can afford a payment of as little as $35 a week for just 12 months and have a checking or savings account, you're already approved, guaranteed. Call 1-800-823-0157 right now and tell us where you want your brand new name brand computer delivered. If you can afford $35 a week for just 12 months and have a checking or savings account, your brand new state-of-the-art PC will be on its way, guaranteed. Bad credit, no problem. Blue Hippo Funding says you're approved for the computer of your dreams, guaranteed. Call right now, 1-800-823-0157.
gosh, words fail me. I can't begin to describe the level of pride I feel for Congress, which has recently stepped forth boldly to meet the crying health needs of a group of America's senior citizens, themselves. As you might know from extensive media coverage, Congress has been grappling with a reform of the Medicare program to extend some prescription drug coverage to millions of needy retirees on Medicare. Alas, the coverage that the leaders provided in their bills is meager and might do more harm than good, for it could cause corporations to drop drug benefits now provided in their health plans for some 13 million American retirees. The Republican leadership cited budget constraints as their reason for having to shortchange seniors. Of course, the budget is constrained because they've already thrown unlimited billions at the Pentagon and have removed more than $1 trillion of our public funds to provide unwarranted tax giveaways for the wealthiest 1% of Americans. But that's another story. Meanwhile, what you probably don't know, thanks to sparse media coverage, is that these same leaders have since passed a special drug benefit for a select group of retirees that, lo and behold, happens to include members of Congress. Apparently, they felt no budget constraints when addressing the needs of senior Congress critters, for their benefits package is far more generous than what they doled out so stingily for ordinary, everyday, run-of-the-mill seniors. For example, retired Congress members will pay no additional premium or deductible for their drug coverage, while other retirees are assessed an extra $420 out-of-pocket annual premium and a $250 deductible. Representative Pete Stark, disgusted with this privileged treatment, said bluntly, "This bill says we take care of our own, and to hell with the average American." This is Jim Hightower saying, "I've got a simple plan for reforming American health care. We'll take the same thing Congress is getting."
Truth, Justice, and the American Way with Mike Malloy. Where else?
Where else but right here on the IE America Radio Network. Thanks for tuning in tonight. 1-800-TALK-YES. That's our number. 1-800-825-5937. We're talking with Joanna Crane. She is head of the Identity Theft Unit of the Federal Trade Commission. A survey just came out this week saying that identity theft, meaning you steal someone's credit card, social security number, and then use that to go out and buy something, etc. Credit cards are generally something, certainly internet activity. Anyway, 7 million Americans, 7 million Americans are victims, and that's just this year. Another statistic is that according to the survey, the people that did the survey, the Guttner Group, more than half of all identity theft, where they can document it, is committed by criminals that have established relationships with their victim, like family members or roommates, neighbors, coworkers, those types of things. And I'll tell you, our producer there, Shar, makes a good point, because we are being asked to email and provide our information electronically. And as the the head of the Federal Trade Commission, well, not the head of the Federal Trade Commission, but close enough, the head of the unit anyway, said that that's where most of the crimes are coming from because of the internet. How do you answer Shar's question about we're placing more emphasis on the internet, therefore more crime?
I would have to say that, you know, people really seem to like the convenience of being able to have instant credit or to be able to transact business over the internet, and so there's really a tension between the convenience that consumers want and the security that would need to be in place to really make a difference in the rise in identity theft. And people would have to probably give up some of the convenience and the instantaneous transactions that we've come to expect if more security were going to be put in place to filter out those people who are actually trying to commit identity theft.
You know, I was just in Seattle a couple weeks ago, and I got a chance to tour Microsoft, and obviously the home of the computer and Bill Gates. And a friend of mine took me through Microsoft. I was shocked at how young the people are who work at Microsoft. In fact, these offices, they're like little dorm rooms. There's no decorations or anything. These are people that are sitting there with their computers, and there's a young people. Is this identity theft? This is a young person's crime?
It's interesting you should mention that. The Federal Trade Commission just brought an action against a 17-year-old who was impersonating AOL and getting people to give him their credit card numbers, and he would then use it to open new accounts or more likely use it to actually make purchases, charging to their accounts. And he had a very sophisticated website that tricked an large number of people, and he was only 17 years old. So, yes, I think that the skills that the younger people have enabled them to manipulate and to create excellent alternate identities in situations where they can use that to commit fraud.
This is like a day we're picking on young people. Earlier, the first hour, we did a story about an 8-year-old boy being charged with rape, and now we're talking about prosecuting a 17-year-old for a major internet crime. Where do we go from here, Joanna Crane of the Federal Trade Commission? What can you tell, and how can you reassure the public that, in fact, internet is a good thing to do, and that unless it's a major purchase, the smaller purchases are in fact good and safe and should be used?
That's right. It's absolutely safe to shop. And if you go to our website, FTC.gov, www.ftc.gov, you can click on consumer advice on how to shop wisely on the internet. And there are some common sense rules. Definitely look carefully at the header, the URL, to make sure that you're not on a spoof website, a lookalike website, to make sure you're really dealing with the merchant you think you're dealing with. Make sure that you are shopping in a secure environment, that the little lock in the left-hand corner is closed, or that the URL says HTTPS instead of just HTTP. Do not give information to someone who has solicited it from you. Rather, you need to be the one who's reaching out and making contact.
Joanna Crane, the head of the Identity Theft Unit of the Federal Trade Commission, thank you so much. We'll check out that website. I appreciate it. All the best to you and your work. Chuck, back in a moment.
Right now, it's nighttime. You're starving, and there are people at Denny's just like you. Except for one thing. See, they're not starving. They just ordered a plate of steamy little mini burgers. Oh, here comes a big plate of hot, zesty nachos. Mmm! You know, there's one more difference between you and them. Yeah, see, they're having fun. Denny's, a good place to sit and eat.
You're listening to The Mike Malloy Show, 9 p.m. till midnight, Eastern Time, Monday through Friday on IE America Radio Network.
Arsenic is a deadly toxin for most creatures, but some actually use it to survive. I'm Jill Ladwig for Earthwatch Radio. Tiny bugs that eat arsenic might be contaminating drinking water around the world. They appear to be releasing arsenic from underground rocks and helping it get into water supplies. Ron Ormland is a microbiologist with the U.S. Geological Survey, and he studies these bacteria. Ormland says they live in freshwater lakes and springs, and they actually get energy from arsenic.
This is an element that is very toxic to all forms of life, and these bacteria have not only adapted to the presence of arsenic, but they've also been able to exploit it as an energy source. So that to us is basically very curious.
Arsenic is a natural component of many rocks, and it's often present in underground water reservoirs known as aquifers. Ormland says the arsenic-eating bugs appear to help release arsenic from the underground rocks, and that allows the toxin to get into the water. Arsenic is normally bonded to minerals in rocks, but Ormland says the bacteria weaken that bond. When that happens, the arsenic dissolves in water and enters what's known as its aqueous phase.
It means the arsenic goes from the solid phase into the aqueous phase. And the aqueous phase in groundwater is what is pumped up and goes into your cup and into your body.
Ormland says the bacteria might be one reason so many aquifers around the world are tainted with arsenic. For example, he says more than 30 million people in Bangladesh are drinking water contaminated with the toxin. Ormland says learning more about these bacteria might help resource managers clean up contaminated water before it goes to the tap. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Anaconda.
Budgie.
Camel.
Dick Dick.
Emu.
Frog.
Gopher.
Hyena.
Iguana.
Jaguar.
Cuda Mundi.
Llama.
Minx.
Animal
Narwhal.
Talk. We talk Ostrich. About what you do to your animals and what your animals do to you. Mark, Donna, and Dr. Brad answer all your animal questions from A to Z. Sunday nights on IE America Radio Network.
Ostrich.
Penguin.
Whale.
Rooster.
Seal.
Tortoise.
Vampire.
Hi, Truth Seekers. This is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive, political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES. Talk radio right from the left. It's Mike Malloy.
And I'm Charlie Langton sitting in for Mike Malloy today, who is on vacation. He'll be back next week. I'll be back with you tomorrow. And I want to focus a little bit on the second hour of the program. Don't go away. But after this, we're going to be talking about an issue that has really gotten a lot of attention, mostly in this Atlanta and then recently in New York with an exhibit on lynching. I understand that our guest, who has written a book collecting photographs, a pictorial history of lynching, it was first published at an exhibit in conjunction at Emory University, and then with the Martin Luther King Museum in Emory, and it's created quite a stir. We're going to be talking about the history of lynching, why it is now on exhibit, and why a lot of, amazingly, African-Americans are actually going to this exhibit and finding out about a part of American history that we just don't talk about and really have never talked about. It's fascinating. It's very disturbing. I will warn you, that is coming up in the next hour of this program. I want to focus attention on another issue of importance, and an issue where I think the laws have changed quite a bit. Illegal immigrants, because of 9/11, I don't think anybody can really doubt or question the federal government. Well, of course we can question the federal government. We do it all day long. Mike Malloy's made a career of this. But questioning the federal government as to how far the federal government can go in really detaining immigrants, especially Arab Americans, with the hope of finding out some information about anything that might help in the investigation of terrorism. Now, there was an act called the Patriot Act that was passed within, seems like moments, but I think it was actually within 6 weeks, this bill sped through Congress, signed by the president, and a lot of groups have criticized different aspects of the Patriot Act. And on this radio network, we've certainly talked about that in the past, but I want to follow up as to where we're going today. There was a recent story that just came out that a lot of illegal immigrants are unable to make bond. They're unable to make their bail. They're actually staying in jail, awaiting certain deportation hearings and certain other hearings. Now, some of this is absolutely justified. Some of it, though, really isn't. So I want to get an update as to what we're doing and what the law and how this Patriot Act is really developing. I am pleased to be joined by attorney Noel Salah. He is an attorney with the American Civil Liberties Union. Prior to Mr. Salah's joining the American Civil Liberties Union, he was a very prominent, well, he still is a very prominent immigration lawyer, and I'm pleased to have him on the program. Hello, sir.
Good evening.
Could you just, I know this is a fairly general question. I don't like necessarily being so general, but in a summary, if you could you summarize, say, the Patriot Act or the reaction today, now a year and so almost coming up on 2 years after 9/11, where are we going now?
Yeah, it's an impossible thing to summarize because it's so draconian. You know, the biggest problem with the Patriot Act is that, as you suggested, it was passed at almost in a hair's breadth after 9/11, and there was really no congressional oversight or thought into the ramifications of some of these provisions and expanded powers that were given to the Justice Department, and how they're being implemented by John Ashcroft is really a very scary thing. The biggest problem I see is that that they've really expanded the use of secret search warrants and black bag jobs, if you will, and allowed that to be used against U.S. citizens. And typically that type of intrusion had really been denied. Courts just wouldn't authorize it. You know, the whole concept of the Fourth Amendment and our rights to privacy and freedom from unwarranted searches. It doesn't have a lot actually to do with the detention of Arabs post 9/11. That really more came out of John Ashcroft's interpretation of what is appropriate power granted to the president by a September 18th joint resolution of Congress.
So we really should separate then the Patriot Act from the forcible detention of predominantly Arab Americans under the guise of getting information about terrorism.
That's
two
correct,
separate.
Yes.
Let me join if I would. Help me out here. My understanding that the House just took up a measure that would actually eliminate some of the what they call the sneak and peek searches of private property. Are you familiar with that?
Yeah, I am familiar with it. A lot of the sneak and peek, especially those that are allowed against U.S. persons, which is a U.S. citizen or lawful permanent resident, have sunset provisions in them in the Patriot Act, which is if Congress doesn't renew them, they'll expire in December 2005. John Ashcroft has been very public about not only does he not want them to sunset, he wants those sunset provisions removed and that those act should become permanent. And what Congress has done, and really Congressman Crockett, Conyers and Sensenbrenner, what they've done is they're trying to implement a provision which would call for oversight of the, a much increased oversight over the use of this expanded power of the Justice Department. And Mr. Sensenbrenner has even been quoted as saying, over my dead body, will these sunset provisions ever become removed or become permanent? So there really has been a much stronger reaction in Congress, raising civil liberties concerns.
Is this going to be do you think this is going to be a campaign issue in the upcoming election?
I certainly hope so. It certainly is the effort of the ACLU to raised this issue. Over 160 communities in three states have passed civil liberties resolutions expressing concern over the expanded powers granted to the Justice Department in the Patriot Act, and we certainly hope that it becomes a substantial issue in the upcoming election.
What is sneak and peek? Just to give us a little a background, and how it's being implemented today, especially with U.S. citizens now.
Well, how it's being implemented is part of the problem because,
right.
The Justice Department won't tell us how it's being implemented. But what it is it's something that was lifted out of, the old spy versus spy where you sneak into somebody's house, you take things, you make copies of hard drives, you make copies of documents, and you sneak back out, and nobody knows about it. Well,
That's legal.
Prohibited against, you couldn't get a search warrant that you didn't have to at least knock on the door and say, I've got a search warrant. And then if they weren't home, leave a copy of the search warrant so that people knew, that you were aware the government had come in and had searched your house and had taken items. Under a Patriot Act, the government can now do that to U.S. citizens.
And that is still in effect today.
That is still in effect today.
Attorney Noel Salah, how is that being used? I mean, what is the justification that the government is using this search, it was sneak and peek type of thing, without getting a search warrant, without going through what we call the due process, and without going through all of the traditional channels to prevent the invasion of people. What's the government's justification for that?
Well, the government says it needs this extraordinary power because of the threat of terrorism, and that the only way to be able to effectively combat terrorism is to grant the Justice Department this power, and that if they had to follow the traditional due process route and announce that they were doing this, that this would interrupt their investigation into terrorism.
Is the implication by the federal government disproportionate to, say, Arab Americans?
Well, certainly the most palpable fear, I think, is being felt in the Arab American community, because they're aware that they're really the targets in this investigation. And the scariest part about it is that, you know, under the Patriot Act, the only limit on the use of this extraordinary power is that it can't be used solely on the basis of a person's First Amendment activity. But that doesn't give you any cause for great warmth and security, because it solely just means that it can't be used for something that you've said, but it could be something that you've said, some First Amendment activity that you participated in, combined with a trip to the Middle East, combined with a donation to a charity that forms the basis for the Justice Department going into your home and doing this type of intrusive search.
Now, tell me to keep my mind to my own business here, but I did seem to read an article, I think, that was published in one of the local newspapers, that you said, you actually made a statement, that you thought that you could have been subject to a search because of perhaps a donation that you made yourself?
I said that, I don't think I said I thought I could have been. I'm saying that based upon the government's criteria, they would be able to ask for and receive this type of search warrant. And that was because prior to the Patriot Act, I had made a donation to a charity in South Lebanon, and that was at least ostensibly or could theoretically be related to Hezbollah, and that based upon that alone, if they wanted to find out more about my activities, they could go to this FISA court, this Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act court, and be authorized for a secret search warrant.
They have not done that, though. Is that right?
Not to my knowledge, but that's the other problem. It is a secret search warrant, so you don't ever know unless and until actual criminal charges are brought against you.
And you can't fight this. If the police, actually, is it the Justice Department then would come out, or is that the FBI?
It'd be the FBI. Yeah.
It is the FBI. There's nothing you can do. There's no appeal.
Well, there's no appeal, and you don't know for a fact that they've done it. And they can, on the basis of such flimsy allegations, they can search library records, internet service provider records. And if they do search my library or my ISP records, you know, the librarian or the ISP provider can't tell me that they've done that.
What about recording of phone conversations? Is that part of the Patriot Acts and this sneak and peek type thing?
Certainly recording of phone conversations is also included in the Patriot Act.
What is the ACLU doing to try? I mean, is this a legislative effort? Is this a judicial effort to try to undo this, or at least put some limits? I mean, obviously, try to be somewhat balanced here. I mean, if the federal government, see, under the old, and correct me if I'm wrong, Attorney Noel Salai, you certainly know this better than I, but under the old law, the way I've always thought about it, is that the federal government has some suspicion, some reasonable cause to believe that a crime is being committed and that you've committed it, they can certainly get in a search warrant, go through the proper channels, and there is at least some check and balance with the judiciary. That's my understanding of the old law, which, of course, is not the case now.
That's a correct understanding of the old law, and that's what we're in the ACLU and others are saying should always be the law.
Are you getting support from the appellate courts? I know this has been challenged.
Well, unfortunately, it hasn't been challenged directly yet. The ACLU was involved in litigation where there is a Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act court, which is a secret court. It meets in the Justice Department, and it's not open to the public. And the court did an unprecedented thing, and they published, meaning they put an open opinion opposing the guidelines for the use of these secret search warrants as proposed by the Justice Department. The ACLU, the government appealed that to the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act Court of Appeals, and the ACLU filed an amicus brief saying that the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act District Court was correct. Unfortunately, the FISA Court of Appeals said no, there was enough of a basis and sustained the guidelines that Mr. Ashcroft submitted. That so far has been the only, and that's even an indirect challenge on these aspects of the Patriot Act.
Who appoints these judges to this Foreign Intelligence Court?
Mr. Rehnquist, the Supreme Court Chief Justice.
There's no advice and consent from the Senate?
Well, they are already U.S. Federal District Court justices.
Oh, I see. Judges of the federal court.
That they're judges of the federal court that are appointed to also serve in this secret court capacity.
But you know the names of the judges. That part's known. Is that right?
Yes, at least it's known because they, publish these decisions, yeah.
Is it a very partisan, the selection that Chief Justice Rehnquist makes to this Foreign Intelligence Court?
Well, it is, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, it's a dumb question, but... Yeah. But see, that's the politics, and they have this. And I didn't know this, but they have their own appeals court too.
And the only time the appeals court never met, and all of it was created, I think, in '78, and in all the years of its existence, it had never published a decision before, and the appeals court had never met at all. This was the first time the appeals court ever had to meet because no decision of the surveillance court was ever rejected. And if it was, the government's the only party that knows about it, so they're the only party that can file an appeal.
You know, you're lucky that the ACLU actually was able to file an amicus brief in this case.
You're absolutely correct.
I mean, really, that's probably something. I tell you, I bring this up because I don't think that we know a lot about it. There's not a ton written about it, but from what is out there, I think it's an issue that probably should be brought up in at least this next campaign cycle. And I guess the efforts, and you tell me again in the 30 seconds or so that we have left, you're not going to win in the courts. The legislative arena would be where you go from here.
Legislative fix is obviously the strongest fix that we have. And with the growing discontent of Congress, because they're asking questions of the Justice Department, and the Justice Department isn't giving answers,
sure.
And so that's really pushing Congress to resume its role as one of the three separate branches and demanding that there be oversight.
We will follow this issue. Attorney Noel Salah, ACLU, thank you so much. I appreciate this. Charlie Lighton, back in a moment.
Right now, it's nighttime. You're starving, and there are people at Denny's just like you. Except for one thing. See, they're not starving. They just ordered a plate of steamy little mini burgers. Oh, here comes a big plate of hot, zesty nachos. Mmm! You know, there's one more difference between you and them. Yeah, see, they're having fun. Denny's, a good place to sit and eat.
I am driven to overcome.
I am driven to succeed.
If you're driven, then you need a health insurance company that's driven too and knows how to take care of the self-employed, the backbone of our country. Call 877-740-7797 and have the Mega Life and Health Insurance Company provide you with affordable health insurance.
I am driven to be my own boss, to live my own life.
I am driven to work when I want to, with whom I want to.
I am driven
to be the best.
And I expect the companies that support me to be driven too.
For affordable health insurance designed for the self-employed, call right now. 877-740-7797. Toll free, 877-740-7797. Mega. We are driven. Home office, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Not available in all states. Benefits may vary by state.
Wouldn't it be great if you could get everything you need for successful estate planning in one package? Well, now you can. The new Master Estate Kit offers a collection of legal power that would cost you $500 or more if prepared by a lawyer. Here's what you get. First, a legal will kit, one praised by nearly 500,000 buyers. Second, a living will kit that assures your wishes will be followed in case of an irreversible injury or illness. And third, a power of attorney kit that includes all the required forms. Order today and we'll include the new Family Legal Guide. It answers all your questions about small claims court, landlord agreements, personal bankruptcy, and much more. An $80 value, the complete Master Estate Kit costs only $39.95. For immediate delivery of the Master Estate Kit and your free Family Legal Guide, call 1-800-221-0393. Pay only $39.95 plus shipping. Every kit carries an unlimited money-back guarantee. Call 1-800-221-0393 now. That's 1-800-221-0393.
Show.
Who's on the newsmaker line? George W.?
I thought maybe you could ask me some of them questions.
Oh, okay. In the past, it appeared that Kucinich supported the global gag rule that you have enforced. What's your position on that?
Vice President Cheney assures me that the gag rule is very important in case I say something stupid.
Oh. What do you have in mind for the Middle East and the situation in the Korean Peninsula?
Gonna kill him.
You're gonna kill him, okay.
Gonna kill him.
Are you interested in an in-depth inquiry into the missing weapons of mass destruction?
Weapons of mass production are there. We found two trailers. Now, my daddy has an Airstream, so I know about trailers.
Yeah.
And if they roll over on a little car or something, there's a lot of destruction there.
Yeah, I see. Okay,
they flip over in those desert winds.
Yeah.
The Mike Malloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
If you're looking for the latest in cutting-edge technology and the products that everyone is talking about, tune into tomorrow right here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the highly interactive radio program with experts featuring the latest in consumer electronics, technology, computers, and the Internet. We cover all things cool, like digital photography and video, home theater and audio, home automation, gadgets and gizmos, the technology of making music, computer peripherals, HDTV, DVD, MP3s, car audio, navigation and security, and lots more. If it draws current, we talk about it. Let us bring you into tomorrow. Check out our website anytime at graveline.com and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, here on the IE America Radio Network.
It's not your father's talk radio. It's Mike Malloy.
And I'm Charlie Langton sitting in for Mike Malloy. He will be back next week. I'll be here tomorrow as well. We'll be talking about, we've got a couple of good things talking about tomorrow. We'll leave that for a little later. I just wanted to follow up on what Attorney Noel Salah said about some of the problems that have arisen because of the Patriot Act. I guess when it was first thought of, the country was shocked because of 9/11. Now, this has been talked about before, but within weeks, I don't know if people realize this, but within 6 weeks, this act was passed by Congress, signed by the president, and implemented. And there are so many provisions of the Patriot Act that are now being understood, or at least when most of the discretion of the Patriot Act is vested in one person, that being perhaps the Attorney General, some bad things happen. That's the whole principle of having checks and balances and having a court system that can implement and check the investigative agencies of our government, but it's not happening. And what is very disturbing is this Foreign Intelligence Court. It is really a secret court. It operates for the most part in secret, and for the most part, it has done away with traditional what we call due process rights. So if the government suspects you of being a terrorist, which is a very loosely defined term, pretty much they can go in to your house, they can search you, they can wiretap you, they can look in your emails, they can look throughout your records, and you know what you can do about it? Nothing. You're right. That's not. You can't do anything about it because it's under the Patriot Act. The government justifies this because of 9/11 and because of the security needs and because of terrorism. Now, I'm not saying that the government shouldn't have some authority, but I do want the due process. I want the check on the government, and I want that to happen. If it doesn't happen, we have pretty much rogue groups can go in and do whatever they want. And I think that's wrong. And I think that we have to talk more about this Foreign Intelligence Court. I was really unaware of the Foreign Intelligence Appeals Court that really pretty much have ultimate discretion and authority to investigate supposed acts of terrorism. It's disturbing. It's going to happen. We'll be talking more about that. Hey, listen, real quick, stay with me. The second hour, the hour coming up right now, we're going to be talking about lynching. And we're going to be talking about a very, very disturbing book. This gentleman collected pictures, actual pictures of lynching. And it's an exhibit and it's touring the country. And many of the people that are seeing this are African Americans. It's an amazing story. The guest will be with me. I want to take your calls. 1-800-TALK-YES. We'll be talking about this phenomenon in the coming up right now about lynching and what it has the effect now when we talk predominantly about affirmative action. It's a fascinating story, but I'll tell you, it is very disturbing. That's coming up. I'm Charlie Langton. I'll see you after the news and after the break. And we'll be back in the third hour of the program.
What do you think I like about commuting with nature as much as I do being on the tractor as much time as I do or spending time with the animals?
Spitting diesel into the ozone layer? Yeah, you're at one with nature.
You have meddled with the primal forces of nature, and you will atone.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Hi, Truth Seekers. This is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive, political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES.
This is IE America Radio Network News. I'm Darren Copeland. A shooting at New York City Hall has killed two people, including a city councilman. Reporter Glenn Shuck described what he heard about the shooter.
More than one city councilman reported that it was a silver handgun that was used by a person that was wearing a blue blazer. The council witnesses said that this person in a blue blazer, a male, simply stood up, pulled out the silver handgun, started firing anywhere between 5 and 10 shots.
Hospital sources say Councilman James Davis was killed. Authorities say the shooting was not an act of terrorism. Councilman David Weprin described the scene in council chambers as a war zone. Emergency officials say both of the victims were transported in cardiac arrest. Police are still looking for the gunman. One New York councilman said he felt it was a planned attack with a specific target. Bail has been set at $250,000 for a New Hampshire man suspected of killing his two children. Manuel Gehring was arraigned today in Concord on a charge of interfering with child custody. Jennifer, a friend and neighbor of Manuel Gehring, says she is having a hard time believing that Gehring could do such a thing.
I did not believe that he was capable of this. As much time as he has spent with neighborhood children, two of which are mine, I never saw it. It just never saw anything, never saw any mental instability with Manny at all. Nothing.
Gehring is expected to eventually face murder charges in the deaths of his 11-year-old son and 14-year-old daughter amid a custody dispute. Gehring was also ordered to sign a waiver of extradition to possess no weapons and have no contact with the children's mother. The bodies of the presumed victims are believed to be buried somewhere in the Midwest and have not yet been located.
Still using Clarinex, Zyrtec, or Allegra? Then be aware, because this year many prescription plans are raising the copayment cost of your allergy medicine. So why pay more when those medicines are approved to treat fewer triggers? Ask your doctor about Flonase, fluticasone propionate nasal spray 50 micrograms. 99% of prescription plans cover Flonase, and Flonase is approved to relieve the nasal symptoms from pollen, dust mites, pet dander, pollution, smoke, and strong odors. More triggers than any leading allergy medicine. For best results, use Flonase daily. Maximum relief may take several days and results may vary. Side effects are generally mild and may include headache, nosebleed, or sore throat. To learn more about Flonase, see our ad in Fitness Magazine. Visit www.flonase.com or call 1-800-FLONASE. Allergy medicines costing you more? Simply ask your doctor if Flonase is right for you. All it takes is Flonase.
West African leaders have decided to send 1,300 Nigerian troops to war-torn Liberia. Officials from the Economic Community of West African States say the forces will be sent to the country on a date to be set next week. International aid agencies have voiced growing concern about the upsurge in fighting. Mohamed Sirian from the United Nations Humanitarian Affairs Office says the city is a disaster.
People are out trying to fetch water, to find food, but that is really difficult because food is in very short supply, water is running dry. So the situation is desperate, really.
In Washington, Secretary of State Colin Powell is pressing the White House to intervene to calm the violence as rebels continue their assault on the capital city of Monrovia.
Right now, it's nighttime. You're starving and there are people at Denny's just like you. Except for one thing. See, they're not starving. They just ordered a plate of steamy little mini burgers. Oh, here comes a big plate of hot zesty nachos. Mmm! You know, there's one more difference between you and them. Yeah, see, they're having fun. Denny's, a good place to sit and eat.
Members of Congress took time out of their schedule to celebrate the 40th anniversary of the March on Washington. The leadership of both the House and Senate are remembering the march as the dawning of a new age in the fight for civil rights. Senator Edward Kennedy says the huge number of people who showed up for the 1963 event opened the eyes and the conscience of the nation. Congressman John Lewis, who was one of Dr. Martin Luther King's closest supporters during the civil rights days, says while the country has made great progress in race relations since the August 28, 1963 march, more has to be done to ensure that racism and Jim Crow does not return to haunt the U.S. in the 21st century. On Wall Street, a late rally sent the major market averages into positive territory. The Dow Jones Industrial Average gained 35 points and finished at 91.94. The NASDAQ added 13 points to 17.19. The S&P 500 was up half a point to finish at 9.88. I'm Darren Copeland, and this is IE America Radio Network News.
Hi, I'm Bobby Likas with today's Car Clinic Minute. What could the Lost in Space robot and Star Wars R2-D2 have in common with a phenomenon called dieseling? Will Robinson and Luke Skywalker know, and when I come back, I'll tell you.
Asphalt, rubber, metal, speed. This is racing for Tony Stewart, Dale Earnhardt Jr., Matt Kenseth, and John Andretti. There's one more key to racing, Champion Spark Plugs. They race different makes of cars, Chevy, Pontiac, Dodge, Ford. But they all trust Champion because they all have the same destination, the winner's circle. Champion powers all.
Be sure to ask your service technician or auto parts retailer for Champion Spark Plugs.
Just like Will and Luke have some far-fetched friends to warn them of impending danger, your car has ways to warn you of the impending danger of neglected maintenance. One tune-up red flag is dieseling. Known as after-run, dieseling occurs when an engine chugs on after the ignition is turned off. Causes? inferior gas, excessive idle speed, and carbon in the combustion chamber. Dieseling is just one warning that, if neglected, may leave you lost in space. The space alongside the road. I'm Bobby Likas. Likas, you'll love us! Brought to you by Champion, the world's favorite spark plug.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network. Live from America's heartland, your humble and obedient servant, the man who says no to the flying monkey right, Mike Malloy.
And hello, what it all, Charlie Lightgen here. Mike Malloy is on vacation. I'm sitting in for him today, and I'll be here tomorrow as well. He is earning... he's taking a nice needed vacation. He earned it. Why not? He can do that. We're talking in this segment, as I've talked about throughout the show here, talking about something that I read a story about maybe a year or so ago, and I've had the pleasure of talking to our next guest. We've actually talked in the past. His name is James Allen. James Allen. Well, I'll probably let him describe himself, but in a nutshell, James Allen is a he's kind of an antique dealer. He kind of collects things. He's got an interesting background, but in his travels throughout his years, he collected pictures. He came across postcards, and he noticed that predominantly in the South, some of these postcards that he found in his travels were depicted lynchings. And when I say lynchings, I mean stereotypical lynchings. I mean, it's the real thing. It's people being hung, usually from a tree, but it could be from a light pole. It could be from a bridge. It could be from trees maneuvered together. These are very graphic pictures. I say mostly from postcards, but there are other pictures. James Allen collected these. He compiled these in a book that was published about maybe 2 or 3 years or so ago. The book is called Without Sanctuary, Lynching Photography in America. Correct me if I'm wrong, I'm assuming, but this is probably the only book that's published that depicts these are horrible, horrible pictures. But they're real pictures. And amazingly, these pictures start, I think the earliest, and I should have this in front of me, but I think they started about 1882, if I'm not mistaken. The most recent picture is from the 60s, 1964. That's amazing to me, but it's amazing. What is also amazing to me is that in many of these pictures, there's not only the graphic, often mutilated, often burned body of the victim mostly African-American, although not all, but mostly African-American, just the graphic nature of the burned and charcoaled body, oftentimes riddled with bullets, because that was a common practice in those days, that after the lynching, people would actually take shots at the bodies. But what is mostly disturbing to me, and I realize this is radio, but are the crowd scenes of the people captured in these photographs. Many of these people are young people. These are children. They can't. I'm looking at a picture right now from a 1920 lynching. These are kids. They can't be more than, they can't be teenagers. They probably are younger than that. And what's even more amazing to me is that in many pictures, the crowd is smiling. And I'll let our guests discuss this more, but in many pictures, the crowd is actually, I guess this is an approval of sorts. And again, as I mentioned the postcard, I don't want to belabor this, but it is worth discussing to make a point that a lot of times that these pictures were put on postcards and then they were sent out to friends. Perhaps people could not make the lynchings. They could not attend these lynchings. This is a part of history that probably up until James Allen published this and made this into an exhibit that was first viewed in New York City and then later in the South, and now it has actually been talked about around the country. But until James Allen's compiled this, this was a part of history that people did not talk about, or very few people talked about. In fact, very few people even realized or even saw pictures. And the prevalence of these pictures, I mean, they're out there. Now, only now, are really coming to light. Joining me on the program, and it's a pleasure to have him, is James Allen. Mr. Allen, thank you again for discussing this
good evening.
Phenomenal work.
Good to hear your voice and listen to your show.
Well, thank you. I appreciate this. Listen, if you want to join in the conversation here, the number here, I should give the number to the studio, and Mr. Allen has agreed to stay with us the whole hour. It's 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937. Of course, we're on the website at ieamericaradio.com, and we're on the satellite as well at Sirius, channel 145. Mr. Allen, yes. We've talked before, but tell the audience how or why you actually started collecting these photographs of lynchings.
Well, my whole adult life practically has been in the South, the Deep South, collecting historical objects and art and reselling them to museums and collectors. So I spent a lot of time down country roads and out in small towns, and someone called me about an oak desk and told me that they had found something very unusual in the drawer. And I went to see it, and it was a photograph. This was 20 years ago that I couldn't ascribe a country to or a place. And it was so more than disturbing. It wasn't the corpse that hangs in the woods. It was the people who were milling around, in this case, all white men, in a woods, kind of totally indifferent to the corpse. Some looking at it, some looking away, someone looking at the camera, as if they just got up from a big lunch meal and were waiting for the next event. And I had never seen anything like it, and couldn't believe that obviously it was some sort of crime, that people were so unafraid, unmasked, to be photographed.
Lynchings, we don't have reliable statistics, but some, and correct me if I'm wrong, James Allen, author of the book and the collector, but it looks like between 1882 and 1968, according to some information that I have here, there were roughly 4,700, almost 5,000 people died of lynchings, about 3,500 of them black men and women, too. Mm-hmm. I'll get to that in a minute. Mostly in the South. Mm-hmm. Are those the statistics that you think are accurate?
Well, I think that they're probably grossly underreported. The problem is in totaling the number of these incidents, which most importantly are community sanctioned. These were not crimes. These were not murders that people went to jail for. These were actual citizens, more than three, in the community working together to commit these crimes.
And what were some of the quote crimes that one would suffer the
well,
lynching?
Well, one of the differences between a academic definition of a lynching and a hate crime is that the person be accused of having either committed a crime or broken a social code, and that could be as casual and unwritten code as not stepping off the sidewalk, for instance, returning a white woman's gaze, driving, and we have seen this in more than one state driving a better buggy into town than the white people had. Mm. And our own government is talking about this a lot now in terms of the terrorism and everything, that the attacks that are on our American soldiers in Iraq are not there because the American soldiers are committing crimes. They're there because they're succeeding in some way. And that parallels what happened to African Americans in this country.
Why do you think, James Allen, that some of these pictures were put on postcards?
This was these were truly planned events within a day or two of the supposed crime, and they were had a much broader purpose than punishing a so-called they do it. This was to send a message to the black community that they had a place, and that was under whites. And any white person in this country during these periods had a legal superiority over any black person.
But would the government, the mail, allow postcards to be sent?
Well, they did outlaw the sending
eventually, yeah,
of mail in 1914 or 16 that incited violence. But we have images that were postmarked later than that, and then it was simply a matter for the majority of them of putting them in an envelope.
I see in the book, the book is without sanctuary. And if you have access to an internet, I think there are some, you can actually get some of the pictures. And again, I warn you, if you look at these pictures and in this book, they're very graphic. They're extremely graphic. And as I've described some of them before, they're quite disturbing. In fact, when I first got the book, I was visibly disturbed. And I had no idea that this stuff was actually going on. I noticed that in one of the pages, it's written, it's 1911. It's the, if I can get it real quick here, but there's a copyright on it. These were not copyrighted, were they?
The Marion, Indiana lynching of two men, Thomas Shipp and Abram. Can't remember his first name right off, but
that's right.
In that lynching, the photographer made 10,000 images before the governor of the state made him quit. And that was just within a few days he did that. And those images were sold for $1 a piece.
Oh, my goodness.
So you imagine in 1930.
Yeah.
I bought images from families that were sold to them door to door, where the photographer knocked on the door. I've got postcards that where you could write and order 100 at a cheaper rate. This was a very much a traditional ritual in the United States, and there never was a federal law passed of any kind to stop lynchings, and there were serious and organized attempts, but the Southern politicians filibustered and never successfully were we successful. The activists and getting a law passed.
Yeah. We're going to break in just a moment. My guest, James Allen, will be back in just a moment talking about lynchings.
Just like you. Except for one thing. See, they're not starving. They just ordered a plate of steamy little mini burgers. Oh, here comes a big plate of hot, zesty nachos. Mmm. You know, there's one more difference between you and them. Yeah, see, they're having fun. Denny's, a good place to sit and eat.
Mom, Dad,
someone's going to try and get me to take drugs.
Want to do something about it?
You're going to have to make me tell you where I am and who I'm with every day. Don't like the sound of that?
Tuck, you got to be the grown-up.
Kids with involved parents are less likely to try drugs. So ask them, who, what, where, when? Questions. They're the anti-drug.
Call 1-800-729-6686 for more information. Paid for by Office of National Drug Control Policy.
What magazine was the late Senator Paul Wellstone talking about when he said, at a time of growing media concentration, this magazine is an invaluable source of news and information that corporate media would too often prefer to ignore? He was talking about In These Times, a bi-weekly magazine of news, politics, and culture. In These Times has won more Project Censored awards than any other magazine. For 27 years, In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of the labor movement, feminism, grassroots politics, and minority communities. If getting a perspective other than what's in the mainstream media is important to you, In These Times is essential reading. In the words of best-selling author Barbara Ehrenreich, to people who say they're sick and tired of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated news media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Do it now and find out what you're missing. Look for In These Times in bookstores near you or visit them on the web at www.inthesetimes.com. That's www.inthesetimes.com.
Show. Well, let's move on to somebody who is evil but very bright. That would be Ari Fleischer at the briefing today.
The job of anybody who is the White House press secretary is to faithfully articulate what the president is thinking and why he's thinking it. And that's what I do for a living.
Yeah, right. The job of the press secretary is to faithfully articulate what the president is thinking?
When do I get to my Game Boy? Hey, it's time for lunch. I want to take a nap. How do you spell Putin? Let me see. Who's the president of Afghanistan?
You know he tried to kill my dad?
Oh, my God. There's Laura with my milk.
Faithfully articulate what the president is thinking?
All righty, then.
The Mike Malloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights, taking your calls, talking to celebrities like Raven Simone from The Cosby Show and the Dr. Dolittle movies. Do you have any pets of your own?
I do. I have two chinchillas and I have a big Briard.
Do you train your dogs?
I don't. I just give him love and take him out. So he better love me because I have to wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning.
So here you are, Charisse Dolittle, talks to the animals, and you don't even train your own dog. Nothing but love.
Nothing but love. All they need is love.
Animal Talk on the IE America Radio Network.
Mike Malloy is rational and, you know, I mean, whatever.
You want me fired, too?
I mean, I hate the guy. And
you
it's
hate me?
True.
You
why,
hate
why don't
me?
I put something on that says he's a great goof liberal.
Goof?
You know, I just can't believe it.
The Mike Malloy Show, weekdays from 9 p.m. till midnight, Eastern Time, on IE America Radio Network.
Free Radio, only with Mike Malloy.
And I'm Charlie Langton, sitting in for Mike Malloy today. My guest on the program is James Allen. He is author of the book, Without Sanctuary. It is a photographic history of lynchings in America, a part of history that up until probably Mr. Allen that we really have not talked about. I am looking at a rather disturbing picture in this book. It's the lynching of Lee Hall. I'll just describe it. His body is hung from a tree. There is a bullet hole in his head. His ears are cut off. He's thrown in the trash, really. And this is not the worst one, let me tell you. But this was very common practice that the people of the day would mutilate these with the bodies, sometimes cut off body parts, sell the body parts, and actually this would be a public spectacle. Mr. Allen, when you found these pictures, were you shocked? I mean, you said about the first one that you did, but was there one particular one maybe that shocked you, or what did you think you were getting yourself into when you started semi-collecting these?
Well, when I purchased that first card, and not until my second card did I really start to form a pretty intense curiosity. The second card was of Laura Nelson in Okemah, Oklahoma, the only known photograph of a woman. There's 89 documented cases of women who were killed and quite brutally. I think Laura was killed in 1911.
Yeah.
But I tried to find out about these cases, and came a disturbing factor was that we have these huge libraries in the country, and none of them had set about to collect this history. And so as I was able to find out more, I would go to some of the counties where there were the highest frequency of these community, again, murders, and nobody in town would know. Hmm. You know, I'd ask the police department, find the local historian, read the county history, and it was a very intentional and successful effort. These murders were used by communists in Russia and Germany as propaganda against democracy and against the American form of democracy. So they were widely covered in the foreign press.
I'm looking actually at you speak of the media, and the media played quite a role in some of these lynchings. I'm looking at the lynching of John Holmes, 1933, in San Jose, California. The picture is such that Mr. Holmes is naked. He is hanging from a tree. There are onlookers. Apparently, this picture appeared in the morning edition of the San Jose newspaper.
Mm-hmm. Well,
it was eventually confiscated.
Because he was nude.
Oh, is that why?
Yes. It didn't have anything to do with the lynching. The city fathers didn't want a nude man to appear on the cover. And they had the whole edition. The newspapers have a very checkered history with lynching. There's many papers that actually predicted or just outright said there will be a lynching tomorrow at 5. And this would cause great interest in the counties and the areas. And again, many of these victims were taken from courthouses, from courtrooms by mobs. Some, not many, but a few law enforcement people lost their lives trying to protect the individual. Prisons were burned. Courthouses were burned. The mobs went into a sort of frenzied determination that they were going to get in what was truly, in way, I'm sure, more than 90% of the cases, get that nigger and kill him.
James Allen is with us. He's agreed to stay the whole hour. My number is 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937. Join the conversation. Find out about why this exhibit is going around the country, why it is so popular, and it is popular with African Americans. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm Charlie.
Right now, it's nighttime. You're starving, and there are people at Denny's just like you. Except for one thing. See, they're not starving. They just ordered a plate of steamy little mini burgers. Oh, here comes a big plate of hot, zesty nachos. Mmm! You know, there's one more difference between you and them. Yeah, see, they're having fun. Denny's, a good place to sit and eat.
You're listening to The Mike Malloy Show, 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Time, Monday through Friday on IE America Radio Network.
For the IE America Radio Network, this is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Hamilton.
And I'm Laura Miller. A huge strike is looming in South Africa, where unions representing gold and coal miners have voted to strike on Sunday unless they reach agreement with mining companies on a new contract that guarantees a raise and preserves benefits. Months of intense mediation haven't brought the two sides closer to a deal, and the miners' unions have declared a deadlock with more than three-quarters of the country's coal and gold mining companies. companies. If a strike takes place, as many as 160,000 people could hit the picket lines.
New evidence, the high-tech industry is joining the manufacturing sector in pursuit of cheap overseas labor. A conference call of top IBM officials recorded last March was recently leaked to the Washington Alliance of Technology Workers. In the call, Tom Lynch, IBM's Director for Global Employee Relations, argues to fellow managers that his company must fire U.S. workers only to replace them with cheaper labor in countries like India, Russia, and China.
Services like accounting and financial services. There are companies that realize that there are lots of skills in places like India to do accounting for a fraction of what the costs are in the U.S. IT supporting services, similarly. Why do you have to talk to someone in your own country?
Lynch acknowledges the decision to outsource IBM's U.S. operations will meet resistance, but says executives must steel their resolve to cut labor costs by any means necessary.
One of our challenges that we deal with every day is trying to balance what the business needs to do versus the impact on people. We don't want to sit back and say, don't do it, because it's going to be problems. Our competitors are doing it, and we have to do it.
Lynch also suggests that laid-off employees could be tapped to train their overseas replacements.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org. Hi, Truth Seekers. This is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive, political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES.
Tia Carrera is on the front in Playboy. I think what you have done is give a little more license to people who have a few more years on them.
Probably. A few more years on them.
Well,
yeah.
Stop.
A few more years.
No. I'm talking about now.
Like the tread on a tire.
Yeah, never mind. I can't make it better.
Just when I think you couldn't possibly be any dumber, you go and do something like this.
On the IE America Radio Network.
And now, in pursuit of truth, justice, and a decent cup of coffee, more of Mike Malloy.
And I'm Charlie Langton here sitting in today for Mike Malloy, who is on vacation. I'll be back tomorrow. Mike will be back next week. We're talking with James Allen, author of the book Without Sanctuary. It is a history of lynching photography in America. He's got about 150 pictures depicting lynchings. The book is extremely graphic. If you're on the Internet, you can look up Without Sanctuary. I believe there are some pictures there. I do want to take your calls. 1-800-TALK-YES, and I do have a number of people on the line, and I promise I am going to get to you. Mr. Allen, if you would just please describe for me the most disturbing that I find in your book about lynching, and that's got to be, in my view anyway, the lynching of Mary Turner, and then if you could describe that briefly and why that's included in your book, and then I'll take some calls. Mr. Allen, Mary Turner's lynching?
Well, Mary Turner had the audacity to say publicly that she was going to go to the police and seek prosecution for the men who lynched and killed her husband. This happened here in Georgia, in South Georgia. She was pregnant. She was 8 months pregnant. This so incensed the people, the community, and the mob. They were determined, as Leon Litwack writes in the book, to teach her a lesson. They captured her. They dragged her into the woods. They tied her ankles together. And they hung her upside down from a tree. They doused her clothes with gasoline and burning alive. Lynching is not limited to just being killed by a rope around the neck. Lynching can be beaten to death, drowning. As long as there's three or more people committing this crime without any legal without any court or legal process. And so they doused her clothes with gasoline, and they burned them off her body. She was still alive, and one of the men got a knife that you would use for splitting hogs and cut her abdomen open till her infant child fell out, while another stomped and on the child and killed it. Then the mob joined in and filled the body with hundreds of bullets.
Anthony from Honolulu, you're on the IE America Radio Network with my guest James Allen. Anthony, you're on the air.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, I can, Anthony.
Yeah, appreciate the show. I'd like to add that I've seen some of these postcards, and I am, most blown away by the crowd. And it's my understanding that it was a common practice for, if there was a female lynching, that the crowd members would each have, you know, would gang rape the victim before the hanging. And I was wondering if that was true.
Mr. Allen?
I doubt that that is true because, I mean, it certainly did happen, but in some cases. But you have to remember that these lynchings were community affairs, and women and children would have been present. In some of the instances, again, like Laura Nelson, Okemo, Oklahoma, it was reported that she was raped. There was 40 men who took her out of a jail cell. She was in jail, actually, for trying to protect her son from being captured by the police. And dragged, actually wagoned her and her son 8 miles out of town to a bridge where she was raped before she was killed.
Thank you, Anthony. I appreciate the call. 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937. William from Oklahoma City, you're on the program.
Yes, how you doing?
Good. How are you, William?
Oh, pretty good. Yeah, if I could weigh in on that, I haven't seen the book yet, but through past years, I've ran into photos of lynchings, and as an African American man, you know, before this book, Without Sanctuary, was written, I could go back maybe 10 to 15 years and still see photos of actual lynchings from you know, early 1900s, and it actually stays with you. And the fact of the matter that they grew, that they drew such a large crowds, I don't know what that really says, or I can't really put into words just how deep the arrogance and the hatred was toward another race of a people. And the fact of the matter that they had young kids there, I don't know. It just goes beyond words of how you can really explain that, because the kids were innocent, but they were even traumatized, you know, by their parents showing them, you know, how deep rooted and how low we can go as human beings to express hatred toward another human. And I think where the world after World War II, they were so down on Nazi Germany for the Holocaust, and rightfully so. I think the world still hasn't come to terms with letting America know just how bad that form of terrorism was toward another race of people.
William, hold on the line. James Allen, the author of the book, Collecting of the Photographs, I think William makes a good point about the crowds, and I want to go back to William in a minute, but let me just get your reaction, James Allen, about the crowds.
Well, in 1946, four African Americans were killed here an hour outside of Atlanta in Monroe, Georgia, Moores Ford. And there was a serviceman who had very bravely served their country. There were many cases of servicemen being met at the train stations and beaten if they were wearing their uniforms. African Americans were beaten. So it really didn't seem to sink into the country that, and it's still to this day, Americans do not see themselves as capable, or any American is capable of the types of crimes that we're so used to pointing a finger at other countries. It's rather, we're in a very unique situation in this country that we don't have other countries pointing at us and investigating our crimes against humanity.
Let me ask William, the caller from Oklahoma City. You said, I believe, that you are African-American. Is this something that the photographs of the lynching, the very graphic photographs that are depicted in Mr. Allen's book and then exhibit, is this something that you think people should know about, understand, and perhaps even view?
Oh, yes. I think it's very important because it's a part of our history, number one. And number two, if you don't learn from history, you'll repeat it. I mean, it's been proven for the millennium that, you know, we as human beings were capable of very heinous crimes toward one another. You know, and it's just very unsettling. But the fact of the matter is that you have to get it out there so that, you know, Americans can actually see, you know, because if you don't, you know, you can never say I never. You know, we could go back into that type of situation again. All it takes is just a mass, you know, what word am I looking for, is all it takes is a large enough audience.
Sure.
To do it, and it could happen. I mean, that would be like saying that the Holocaust could never happen.
Sure.
Again, you know, and I
agree with you, and I think that we're getting reports even from overseas about some of the atrocities that are going on over there. But I Mr. Allen, I think when you started this an exhibit, I believe you wanted to get it exhibited in your hometown of Atlanta or in Georgia, but you did meet with some resistance initially.
Oh, tremendous. All through the whole process, there wasn't a single... You know, we have art museums, we have historical societies, we have corporations by the dozens, and not a single entity would make a room available.
Why is that?
Because this reflects very poorly on the education process in America. One of the angers at a military college where I spoke was one of the angry comments that came from an African-American was not just that this went on, but that here he had graduated from college, he had gone to high school, he had gone to grade school in this country, and he had never been taught anything about this history. Mm. Now, does anybody really believe that your father or grandfather or great-grandfather could be brutally murdered, tortured, sometimes up to 8 hours for a crowd of thousands of people for their enjoyment, and that could be taken out of the consciousness and subconsciousness of future generations if it's not acknowledged, that there's not a tremendous pool of unreconciled grief in this country, in the African-American community, where every single generation has to suffer this grief and then reprove it to the country as a whole, fight to prove that this happened and that the certain the extra pressures on a person who lives in a society that doesn't acknowledge what it did is a very painful reality in America.
The number here, if you'd like to join in the conversation, we do have some time left, and Mr. Allen has agreed to stay with us and talk with us about the book, about history, and we're try to figure out why, what we really can learn from this. The number here, 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937. Some people might make the argument, William, in Oklahoma City, I know you're on the line, but some people might make the argument that this is really the lynchings and the atrocities that were inflicted upon many, many African-Americans back in the turn of the century and beyond. would justify the current affirmative action plans. William, you're African American. Do you share that view?
Well, I share that view from the standpoint that to have lived in that in that era, which I didn't live, but speaking of the people that actually did, that's very traumatizing. You know, not only is it a traumatizing, but it causes you to lose faith, you know, in your own country. You know, I know while I served in the military, a lot of times you would hear comments about how African-American soldiers weren't very patriotic, you know. And, you know, although we are patriotic, we're patriotic sometimes with a bit of cynicism because, you know, for the most part, you kind of understand the history of this country. But, you know, we love our country and we want to serve our country, but we also understand that, you know, there's a lot of shortcomings there as far as owning up to a lot of past, you know, discretions and a lot of past crimes against humanity, if you will.
So. All right, William, thank you very much for your insight. Thank you much for the call. I really do appreciate this. It's a sensitive topic, and I do thank you for your honesty and your insight.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
William, your equanimity about this and your speaks to your patriotism. And very subtly, and this is what my friend John and I, who have worked so hard on this, we're really ourselves surprised, almost to a fault, every African-American calls this our history.
Hmm.
Not their history or white history. But this is a thing that the country as a whole needs to take responsibility for. And it has been incredibly encouraging and inspiring to me to see the openness and the patriotism on a level that has nothing to do with fighting and violence by African Americans to not look with hatred upon people that they very well, in strictly human terms, have a reason to.
Thank you very much, William. If I may, Shar is our producer and engineer extraordinaire, I may say. And I'm going to use you as an example. I hope it's okay. She's African-American. I started talking to her about the show today, James Allen, and she said, and you know, we talked a little bit, you know, an hour goes by. And then she comes in and she says, "Where's that book? I want to see that book."
Mm.
And I'll tell you, the whole hour, I said, "Where's my book?" Shar still has it. She's still reading it. And I said to her, what should I ask him? And Shar said, "Ask him why. Why was this done? Do you know?"
I think in the end, I must say that, and I hope this inspires other people in some of these areas, I never had any doubt about what I was doing. Every photograph over the 20 years that it took to assemble this collection gave me a sense of purpose. Every photograph was purchased. We advertised. We all over the country. I made thousands of phone calls and mailed out thousands of flyers, went to shows and handed out thousands of flyers, and really built a network of people around the country because they're very hard to come by because they've been destroyed out of shame.
Sure.
But every card, and they came in all sorts of photographic formats, gave me a sense of purpose that the skills that I had acquired through my business would come to some good to turn the clock back and expose this. And as much as it was very hard sometimes, we tell people we'll pay $1,000 for any image we don't have. It's not what it's worth. It's what it's worth for the collection in terms of telling this history. And sometimes it's hard to pay because you just think, oh, my God, this is not the way I want to spend my money.
Sure.
But until a public entity is ready to take over our efforts, we will do it.
We'll be back with our remaining moments with James Allen talking about lynching. I'm Charlie Langton. Back in a moment.
Right now, it's nighttime. You're starving, and there are people at Denny's just like you. Except for one thing. See, they're not starving. They just ordered a plate of steamy little mini burgers. Oh, here comes a big plate of hot, zesty nachos. Mmm! You know, there's one more difference between you and them. Yeah, see, they're having fun. Denny's, a good place to sit and eat.
Now, everything you need for successful estate planning comes in one package. The new Master Estate Kit is a collection of legal power that would cost you $500 or more if prepared by a lawyer. Here's what you'll get. First, a legal will kit, one praised by nearly 500,000 buyers. Second, a living will kit that assures your wishes will be followed in case of an irreversible injury or illness. And third, a power of attorney kit that includes all the required forms. Order today and we'll include the new Family Legal Guide. It answers all your questions about small claims, court, landlord agreements, personal bankruptcy, and much more. An $80 value, the complete Master Estate Kit costs only $39.95. For immediate delivery of the Master Estate Kit and your free Family Legal Guide, call 1-800-221-0393. Pay only $39.95 plus shipping. Every kit carries an unlimited money-back guarantee. Call 1-800-221-0393 now. That's 1-800-221-0393.
Do you want to own a computer but have less than perfect credit? Bad credit? No credit? No problem. If you have a checking or savings account and can afford a payment of as little as $35 a week for just 12 months, Blue Hippo Funding says you're approved. Guaranteed. You heard right. You're approved for a brand new name brand computer. Call 1-800-823-0157 right now. If you can afford a payment of as little as $35 a week for just 12 months and have a checking or savings account, you're already approved. Guaranteed. Call 1-800-823-0157 right now and tell us where you want your brand new name brand computer delivered. If you can afford $35 a week for just 12 months and have a checking or savings account, your brand new state-of-the-art PC will be on its way. Guaranteed. Bad credit, no problem. Blue Hippo Funding says you're approved for the computer of your dreams. Guaranteed. Call right now, 1-800-823-0157.
You'll be seeing a lot of changes around here.
The new weekend programming lineup is more entertaining than ever. Kick it off Saturday mornings with Doug Steffen's Talk Radio Countdown, followed by Bobby Likas Car Clinic. Then Saturdays are brightened with the informative antics of Animal Talk, followed by the home improvement experts on Home Improvement USA. If you've been wondering about that old so-called junk, then you'll love Antique Talk with Christopher Kent, followed by Talking Pets with John Patch. Learn your job rights on Sunday mornings with the employee's lawyer, Stephen Sack. And the latest in the world of technology on Into Tomorrow with Dave Graveline. Ramblin' with Ramsey will fill you into the hot spots to travel, followed by the second installment of the funniest live animal talk show, Animal Talk.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious, and don't call me Shirley.
For more information on these shows or other shows on IE America Radio Network, call 1-800-397-8255. But for now, listen to us live on IEAmericaRadio.com.
Hello, this is Andy Dave Rush inviting you to join the fun on Home Improvement USA. Great guests and experts offer home improvement advice and keep us updated on new products and technologies. On Home Improvement USA, we give away terrific prizes to all our callers. Join me, Handy Dave, along with Ken Walchek on location at Clark Devon Hardware in Chicago and engineer and handyman Jay Brentlinger for Home Improvement USA. 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 Pacific on Saturday. Don't miss it. Home Improvement USA.
We broadcast it on Saturday at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific on IE America Radio Network.
Hi, Truth Seekers. This is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive, political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES. Standing up to the flying monkey right, it's more of Mike Malloy.
Head out, Charlie Langton here on the IE America Radio Network. I'm talking with James Allen, author of the book Without Sanctuary. It's a photographic history of lynching in America. I'm just looking at one of the postcards that are depicted. Many of these lynchings were actually put on postcards and distributed throughout the country. As Mr. Allen said, it's very difficult to find these today, and he's made a now it looks like a career of trying to find these postcards and photographs of these actual lynchings. They're compiled in this book. One of the inscription on the back of the postcard says that this lynching was made in the courtyard in Center, Texas. He is a 16-year-old black boy. This is an exhibit. It's traveling the country, Mr. Allen. Where are you going, and what can we expect about the minute that we have left here?
Well, I'm very excited that the African American Museum in Detroit is committed to mounting probably the largest exhibit that they'll be of the collection, with over 100 photographs and a lot of material that we've collected from letters, personal letters and diaries and newspaper accounts and pamphlets and work by the activists to try to stop the lynching. And it'll be the first African-American museum to make this effort, and we're just very excited that it's going to be in Detroit.
And as you know, actually, I'm broadcasting today from Detroit here in our studios here, and I'm actually very excited. And you said that this will be opening in Detroit when?
In July of 2004. And it's it's the first time I've talked about it publicly. We've been working out the details, and the curators came down to look at the collection, and they really could only get through a third of it. It's overwhelming for everyone, because this is an untaught history in this country, and it's a very unique eye on what race really has been about.
There's just so many avenues to explore between this, the press, the promotion of this, the history of it, affirmative action. I mean, there's just so many things we can go.
And the involvement of churches and city governments and businesses, the separation of labor that could unite. This was very much a part of keeping whites and blacks apart.
I want to just thank you again. I know the hour is late in your home, Atlanta, Georgia.
That's great.
But I really appreciate talking about this. We've done this before. I hope we'll do it again. I will meet you. I'll say it out of the air, but I'm going to meet you when you're here in Detroit for the opening. It's going to happen. But thank you again. I really appreciate it. And I really appreciate talking about this in the way that you do, to really expose not only this audience, and hopefully it will continue through your efforts, but to a part of history that we really don't talk much about, that at least I personally feel is important, because as one of the callers said, we don't want to repeat the atrocities of what went on. James Allen, the book is Without Sanctuary. You can get it on the internet, bookstores. Again, thank you so much. I appreciate it. All right, and again, all of you, thank you so much. I will be back tomorrow night to carry on the conversations about what's going on in the world. Thank you so much. Have yourself a good evening, and I'll see you tomorrow.
The Mr. Rogers Parenting Book. Fred Rogers, a pleasure to have you here.
What I'm hearing you say is that you delight in creating community.
I do. I think thinking about things and working through problems and issues is an important tool.
I'm just thinking that the world could take some lessons from the Doug Steffen neighborhood.
Doug Steffen's Good Day.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Hi, Truth Seekers. This is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-